Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 23, 2022. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Weird Alex Perine will join us. From his Twitter feed, is the contributing editor of the New Republic and the proprietor of the AP Substack, as well as the host of the Politics of Everything. Also on the program today, comedian Judy Gold will join us, host of the podcast Kill Me Now. Author of Yes, I Can Say That. Also on the program today, U.S. sending a now not so private message to Russia regarding using nukes in the wake of Russia instituting a draft. Meanwhile, Trump's stolen document defense strategy seems to be crumbling as the special master says, put up or shut up. Vote for a continuing resolution on the budget is set for Tuesday, and it appears Joe Manchin's permitting rider will ultimately end up on the cutting room floor. New lawsuit seeks to stop DeSantis from using government money for hoaxes as a second group of migrants is stranded at a motel in Texas as the Delaware flight stunt canceled. Meanwhile, Joe Biden says feds will cover Puerto Rican recovery costs in the wake of Fiona. New poll. 61% of Republicans support declaring the United States a Christian nation. Republicans blocked the Disclose Act in the Senate, and a judge temporarily suspends Indiana's abortion ban. Ongoing protests in Iran in the wake of a morality police killing now being met with government-sponsored counter-protests. And in the right-wing nutjob court docket, MyPillow Lindell can't get his phone back, and Project Veritas found liable in a civil case of violating wiretap laws. Well, not quite lastly, Giuliani backpatter, remember that guy? Charges dropped.
Awesome.
And lastly, speaking of dropped, we have an update on that guy with interesting pronouns running for Congress in Ohio, Majewski. He is a
patriot.
Patriot. He's got a little bit less than Jew-ski.
You said you know he what is. Saying. It's patriot is.
Patriot, sorry.
I mean, come on. This is supposed to be a leftist
show. Ass kicker is. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, casual Friday, as evidenced by, if you are watching us, my soft-collared shirt. It is the tradition around here to do casual Friday dress. Mm. Sometimes I will go as far as my co-host, Emma Vigeland, who is not even wearing a collar. No. What is this, like some type of like mock collar?
Yeah, it's a sweater. I mean, today's in the 50s. I'm mourning the loss of summer a little
bit. I have to turn around and go get a jacket today.
Well, fear not. It'll be back up to the 70s over the summer, over the weekend. That's just the way it works. You know, we get a little fake winter for a day or two. And then we get back to fake summer. And then we get back to real fall. And then maybe another week of fake summer, and then back into winter. That's the way it works.
Yep, life, it's just like a never-ending cycle of hot
weather.
And cold and weather, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, not if you live place where there's not four seasons.
Let's move on.
Right, there you go. 42 degrees up in Vermont this morning, says Haywood, did you blow me? Oh, shoot. On the IM, got me. Very smart. Very
one of the
smart.
Best ones. Yeah.
That was a good one. God, I'm sorry, folks. I'm a little bit off my game today because my hamstring is really hurting today.
Oh, still?
Yeah, it came back. The pain. I injured it almost 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, it's been a while.
And
it's like LeBron on the Heat.
Well, there's a reason why they turned it into a verb. Like, I'm going to hamstring this person's
yes.
efforts
right.
to do this and that. It's because it's debilitating.
We know that it's those soft tissue injuries. It takes a while to come back from that, heal from that.
Well, yeah. Thank you for all right. Soft tissue. Right. Okay. As you know, there is a UN General Assembly meeting happening just a couple of miles from where we are right now. And speaking for the first time, I believe it's the first time he's speaking at the UN, Colombian President Gustavo Petro. You will recall that Petro was elected, was this about a month ago? Was it a month ago? I think so.
And summer.
He is the first leftist to be elected president of Colombia.
Yeah, June 20th.
June 20th, okay. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, three or four months ago. He was a former guerrilla fighter and went on to become an economist and politician. Here he is at the UN. And I don't know. See if you can spot the lie, because I couldn't. It's you know, sometimes you hear speeches like this at the UN, and sometimes they can be a little bit flamboyant or driven by a political ideology. You know, like I remember Hugo Chavez speaking at the UN and getting up to the microphone after Bush had been there, and he could say that you could smell the sulfur.
So funny.
And that was funny, and yeah. I enjoyed that. This one is so spot on that it's disturbing. And it is obviously not in English. I will read the subtitles for those of you who are listening on the podcast. All right, start.
Para ustedes.
You're only interested in my country to spray poisons on our jungles, to take our men to jail and put our women in exclusion. You're not interested in the education of the child, but in killing its jungle and extracting coal and oil from its entrails. The sponge that absorbs the poison is useless. They prefer to throw more poisons into the atmosphere. We serve you only to fill the emptiness and loneliness of your own society, which you are leading to live in the midst of drug bubbles. We hide from you your problems that you refuse to reform. It is better to declare war on the jungle, on its plants, on its people. While you let the forest burn, while being hypocrites, you chase the plants with poisons to hide the disasters of your own societies. You ask us for more and more coal, more and more oil, to calm your other addiction, that of consumption, of power, of money. It's not the rainforest that is to blame. The culprit is your society, educated in endless consumption, in the stupid confusion between consumption and happiness that allows the pockets of power to fill with money. The culprit of drug addiction is not the jungle. It is the irrationality of your world power. You discovered in the 21st century the worst of your addictions. And we have one more clip. It's in two different parts. But so far, I mean, spot on. Obviously, he's talking about the idea of U.S. wants to spray certain areas of, well, not just in Colombia, but maybe primarily so there, and kill crops, opioid crops, cocaine crops, or cocoa crops. This is Petro's response.
As a partner of the sort of international drug war, it's hard to overstate how big of a role Colombia plays. And to have like a leftist president, and Petro is a leftist with a sort of centrist coalition, but speaking this forcefully about, and how important that is. I feel like the way we've been dragging our heels on the drug war domestically is in part because of pharma, but also because of our partners around the world who are sort of still all in on it.
Yep. Addiction to money and oil. Wars have served you as an excuse not to act against the climate crisis. Wars have shown you how dependent you are on what will kill the human species. You propose the market will save us from what the market itself has created. That is neoliberalism in a phrase. The Frankenstein of humanity lies in letting the market and greed act without planning, surrendering the brain and reason, kneeling human rationality to greed. What is the use of war if what we need is to save the human species? What is the use of NATO and empires if what is coming is the end of intelligence? The climate disaster will kill hundreds of billions of people, and listen well, it is not produced by the planet. It is produced by capital. The cause of the climate disaster is capital. The logic of coming together only to consume more and more, produce more and more, and for some to earn more and more, that is what produces the climate disaster.
I mean,
where's the lie?
Yeah. Spot on. And also, I feel like an indication of the way that climate change and combating it is going to be front-facing in countries that were particularly targets of extraction by the West and the global North. It's that's a primary focus in terms of just like justice for leftist candidates in those countries where it's, you know, wealthier nations in the West have not necessarily caught up to connecting those two things yet.
Yep. I don't know. I really don't know how we get from there to from here to there, frankly. But we'll see.
Yeah, one thing would be nice if, like, America was able to do what Bernie wants to do with regards to the Brazil elections and sign a bill saying we're not going to recognize any government if there's a coup.
Yeah,
and he can't get anybody, especially from the Republicans, to join out with him. I'm sure Democrats are joining him, but yeah.
A couple words from our sponsors today before we get to Alex Perrine, today's sponsor, movement partner, great company, SunsetLakeCBD.com. Use the code LEFTISBEST. You get 20% off of all of their products. I honestly don't know if there's a day that goes by where I don't use something from Sunset Lake sebede.com. There may be like one day a week, but last night I had the melatonin gummies with sebede. Sometimes I augment that with the and more often than not, I usually take the the tincture. I'll take the 750. I'll take the 6,000 milligram. It depends on what is actually near my bedside at any time. But also, sometimes on the weekends, I'll have, and certainly the new full spectrum gummies that have a little bit of THC in them. But and then I just had some yesterday. I brewed some coffee that is infused with sebede. Great coffee blends that they have, too. And, you know, when you're looking for a more mellow roast. But also they have fudge, which I have gifted. And they have a sebede salve with arnica that I stumbled across as a salve for mosquito bites. When my kids get mosquito bites, they get they're huge and incredibly painful for them. I guess I don't know why they're so sensitive to it, but that's effective on that. But it's really meant for muscle aches and whatnot. There's a whole host of products. Smokables on the weekend after I have a meal. Maybe sometimes I will have a pre-roll. There's keef. There's flowers. Just great products all around. They have lotions now. That you can check out with sebede, and they're a great company. They have donated tens of thousands of dollars to things like food pantries and strike funds and Innocence Project and Give Directly and refugee resettlement. They have great business practices, $20 minimum wage, mostly employee-owned company. They need people a little more seasonal, you know, because of the harvest. They have great farming practices. They practice integrated pest management, so there's no use of pesticides. They use regenerative farming practices that they developed with the University of Vermont. I mean, just all around a great company. And their products are all third-party tested, which is super important as you get a lot of fly-by-night operations showing up. SunsetLakeSebede.com. Use the code LEFTISBEST for 20% off. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Alex Perrine. Weird Alex Perrine will be on the program. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. Joining us, Weird Alex Perrine. That's his nickname on Twitter. Self-appointed weird. I know that's not actually self-anointed, but he is also the contributing editor or a contributing editor, I should say, at the New Republic. Host of their Politics of Everything podcast, or I should say co-host. And also the proprietor of the AP, which I don't know if a lot of people knew that.
That's
the,
right.
The AP newsletter on Substack. Alex Perrine, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Sam. Good to be here.
Now, folks can't see the ukulele in the frame, so it's not really worth. But I can see
have
it
to
on,
take your word
on
for
ours
it.
Before it cut out. I didn't realize you were a ukulele player.
Oh,
there you go.
Oh, great! That's great work on the production side.
Yeah.
This is what I get for trying to instill a love of music in my child. I get mocked. I get mercilessly mocked.
There you go. Actually, no. I tried. I like one of the projects when I got when I split up from my my ex-wife was I was gonna learn the ukulele, and I tried to learn I can't remember what the song was, but my daughter just kept
mocking me.
Somewhere
Over the Rainbow.
No, it was more like it was more like a pop song at the time, and my daughter mocked me because I don't even I think I'm tone deaf and I don't have any beats, so I really have a lot of admiration for the for people who can actually play anything for that.
Next time I'm in studio, I'll teach you. I'll give you a lesson.
All right. Well, I'm going to hold.
I mean, you could just tell us the news in song, but that that was going to be my suggestion.
I'll have a whole like Capital Steps routine ready for you next time.
Oh my God, Capital Steps. That's going back. I don't think anybody else except for you and I know who you're talking about. If you do some Mark Russell, though, you will get. Nobody will notice that either. All right, so let's start with this week as we look back on the week. There has been now for I guess close to 9 months, 8 months, an ongoing conflict in Ukraine, as you're aware of. There was an article out today where, or maybe it was yesterday, where the U.S. is, this is according to the Washington Post, has sent private warnings to Russia against using a nuclear weapon. And there's also, in the past 3 or 4 days, Putin has called up 300,000 reservists. We don't know the actual numbers that are actually going to show up, but let's just presume that's the case. And yesterday or today, instituted a draft, which is on top of reservists. So you have people come in with no military expertise whatsoever. They're coming in, presumably they're getting trained, but I mean, this is a draft. And I guess from my perspective, like, and I don't know how you feel about the funding. There's tens of millions of dollars. I mean, really billions of dollars at this point, several billions of dollars that we have at least poured into Ukraine. I guess the first thing that sort of strikes me is the United States was warning everyone that Russia was going to invade Ukraine for like a month or two in the ramp up, maybe more. And there was a lot of skepticism about what the United States was saying. There was a lot of folks saying this is just hype. This is the U.S. trying to scare people. And in retrospect, it is clear that they were correct, and they were trying to forestall, it appears, an invasion by Russia of Ukraine. Now, regardless of where people are on how much provocation was involved in terms of NATO, to the extent that Putin was doing this because he was afraid of NATO encroachment, categorically failed strategy. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, NATO has expanded in the past 8 months by two countries. I'm dubious of some of the polling that has taken place around this, but I have no doubt in this country that NATO stands as popular as it has probably ever been or darn close to it in the past like 30 years, 40 years. But I'm concerned about what's going on with this warning about nukes, because this seems to sort of be analogous to what we were seeing in the buildup before the war. The U.S. clearly has intelligence on the inside in Putin's, like, if not circle, pretty close to it.
And it's not hard to imagine that there's some disgruntled oligarchs in that circle who don't feel like they have any other option except to maybe cooperate with U.S. intelligence. I don't know.
What is your sense of all this? Because, you know, clearly Putin is trying, at the very least, Putin is trying to signal that he is not going to end this invasion.
Yeah.
Without achieving something. There's also a vote that has taken place in the Donetsk region. I don't know if it's coming today or within days, that the U.S. has dubbed and Ukraine has dubbed a sham. There's some evidence of that, but it's also very sort of hard to assess. Although I don't know what, you know, this is obviously a non-binding referendum. Mm-hmm. But what is your sense of all this?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, 'cause I remember thinking about the intelligence you were talking about prior to the invasion, and I remember treating it with some skepticism too. But I think, as you say, you know, it's certainly possible the U.S. is hearing from people who don't have or who are trying to get a message across to Putin, you know, and if you believe the reporting that he's sort of isolated or he's, you know, not basically not listening to reason among the people in his government and in his circle, you know, it's a little, I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, and we're dealing with the sort of like, foreign reporting around intelligence stuff that's impossible for us to verify. So, like, right. Who knows how seriously to take it, right? Who knows? And obviously, like, one of the themes of the last year is, like, you know, Putin is not someone who you can say credibly, you know, I know what his plan is here, you know? I mean, he's not, like... You know, people have the sort of madman theory, and then people have the sort of like just normal calculating guy theory, and it's sort of in his interest to toe that line. So I don't know. But I mean, I do know that again, as you said, strategically, this has not worked out to forestall the advance of NATO. It seems like potentially a very bad thing for an armed forces to suddenly have a ton of new recruits who don't necessarily want to be there, along with a depleted officer class, because your military has not been doing very well in this war. That seems like a recipe for a not particularly disciplined fighting force. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I feel like we're going to have to wait for like the deep reporting on this and books that may come out over the next year or two, but it feels like, my sense was at the time that the Biden administration, you know, at least narrowly, conceived, did not want this. There did not want, Russia to invade Ukraine, did not want to have a conflict with Russia. I mean, I think it's quite clear, like, you know, I think the idea that it has now become of sorts a proxy war on some level, I think is accurate, but it didn't. My sense is it didn't start that way, that the Biden administration would not have been pouring money into Ukraine had Russia successfully, I don't know, controlled X portion of Ukraine within a week or two. Like, this did not go for Russia like Iraq did for the U.S., as protracted and as much of a disaster Iraq was. And obviously, in terms of killing, Iraq was, you know, far more of death and destruction. But the U.S. had basically gotten control of the country relatively quick, with obviously ongoing fighting. It did not go this way for Russia. They are back-footed. They need to bring up reserves. They need to bring up a draft. I don't think anybody would have predicted this at that time. I don't even think that, like, U.S. could have had the greatest intelligence in the world.
they're not going to know more than the Russians did about their own army. And I think they're finding out that their whatever was going on with their system was misleading. You know, I don't think Putin thought it was going to go this way. I think they all thought it was going to go much easier. And I don't know that anyone could have predicted this, because I just don't know who would have had that level of intelligence. But here we are now. It is a proxy war. Russia is back-footed. And, I have a problem with the amount of money that we're pouring into Ukraine, but it's also hard to imagine that we would have provided no resources to this country when they're being invaded over such a protracted period of time. I think, you know, if the war had ended more or less in the first week or two, I don't think we would have seen any of this. No. But Russia clearly overestimated its own capacity and underestimated Ukraine's abilities. Yeah. And so now here we are, and I don't know what I don't see how this ends, frankly. Without it being a massive disaster, because it feels like Putin is, you know, projecting like, I'm going down with the ship. This is not going to be a – there's no cutting of losses here.
Yeah, yeah. And that's – I think that's right. I think that if it had – if they had gone in and basically toppled the government in Ukraine and installed someone friendly to Moscow
– which seemed to be the agenda.
That seemed to be the plan. That seemed to be the plan. And I think they thought, I think, that that would be a fairly quick – and relatively easy thing to do. And then having established those facts on the ground, I think you're right. This would be done. I don't think we would be seeing, you know, the conflict would not have, you know, there would have been conflict, but it wouldn't have been this sort of extended war. But yeah, this is a problem, is that I don't see a way out of this that doesn't involve, you know, that doesn't involve Putin basically completely changing everything he has stated as his objectives in waging this war.
Or if he's ousted or something, because these seems far-fetched, and I don't know what the situation is on the ground domestically in Russia, but these images from these anti-war protests, that's just going to get louder and louder if the reservists continue to get called up, and if, like, then we're not just in, you know, partial.
I don't think there are any more reservists to be called up. I mean, I think the 300,000 was like, that's it, and now we're drafting people, and that seems to be like, regardless of how isolated folks are in Russia from news out of Ukraine. It's not hard to sort of make the assessment that, like, wait a second, 9 months into this, we're doing a draft. That's not supposed to work that way. And I don't know, like, you know, 9 months into the Iraq war, I mean, you remember this, Alex, you'd be hard pressed. Well, maybe 16 months into the Iraq war, you'd be hard pressed to walk around the United States and have any level of awareness that we were engaged in a war, killing hundreds of thousands of people, displacing literally millions of people. For the most part, by the time, you know, you get around like 2004, there's anti-war sentiment. And but by the time you get to like 2006, and it was more or less like, it just is. Like, nobody's paying attention to it. And certainly the American public, I would say the awareness of how many billions of dollars that we've sent to Ukraine has got to be incredibly small. The concern about it has got to be even smaller, I would imagine, because the number of people who actually think it's you know, something we shouldn't do, I think, is also pretty infinitesimally small. So there's really very little incentive for the West to stop funding Ukraine. And for the most part, there's every indication that if you were able to hold a referendum in Ukraine, the Ukrainians want that money and those weapons. They're not ready to capitulate. If they were, I don't think this war would have gone on for 9 months, regardless of how much weaponry you can put, you pour in there. And so I just don't see how this ends.
Yeah. I mean, we don't seem remotely close to any sort of like negotiated settlement here. Like that doesn't seem to be a thing that is like at hand. Right. And you know, the deal, like you said, sort of when the U.S. was waging war in Iraq, the deal in Putin's Russia for a long time was, the Moscow elite and the middle class didn't really have to pay attention to what his government was doing out in the rest of the world. They could just sort of, they didn't have to suffer the negative consequences of it. And so, I don't know, if you're seeing a draft and you're seeing these ongoing sanctions that are designed or intended to sort of topple the Russian economy, it is eventually going to be something that is harder to notice and endure for normal Russians who otherwise are, I think, pretty used to living under Putin without having to sort of worry about right. what he's up to. So I don't know.
Well, it's the nuclear weapon thing is disturbing. Because again, there's a reason why, the Washington Post story says the United States for several months have been sending private communications to Moscow. Now that we know about this, mm-hmm. now that somebody has decided that we should know about this, it's concerning.
Yes.
That's the part that really concerns me. But all right, let's move on to another topic. I just getting word that the stream is down on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on YouTube. I'm trying to get it back up. We're live on Twitch.
Are we being censored?
We are being suppressed.
Shadow banned. We spoke about what the intelligence community might know or might not know in Russia. So Deep State's after us.
I wish you could see the look on Matt's face right now. It's a complete bewilderment as to why this is down. Are we back? Looks like we're back. Okay. Somebody could IM the show and tell us if they're seeing that we're back as well. But let's move on, and we will pick up. Matt will do his best to get us back up on YouTube.
Looks like we're back.
Okay. So let's. Oh, all of YouTube seems to be having a moment. So maybe it wasn't just us.
It looks because everything seems to be fine everywhere else. So that's why. And Restream says it has a good connection with YouTube. So I think it might be a YouTube problem.
Okay.
All right. So let's move on to this. This was Joe Manchin. We've been talking about Joe Manchin for 2 years now. Look, at the end of the day, stopping Joe Manchin's agenda is not just because it feels good. It's because his agenda is bad. Mm-hmm. And so it's good for the planet. It's good for the country. But I'm not going to lie. It's also feels good. Let's watch this video of Joe Manchin.
I got to be honest with you. I've been around for a long time in state politics and federal politics. I've never seen stranger bedfellows than Bernie Sanders and the extreme liberal left siding up with the Republican leadership in the caucus. I've never seen this happen. So it's come to me, what I'm hearing is it's like a revenge politics. And basically revenge towards one person, me. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, this is not about me. This is about something that Bernie has never supported anything about permitting reforms.
Oh, I'm so sorry. your colleagues not like you after you said that you were going to agree to a Build Back Better $1.75 trillion agreement in a back room with Schumer, and then as soon as that came to close to a reality, you balked on that promise, and people might have some bad feelings about doing negotiations with you. Did that hurt your fee-fees?
I like how he's trying to sort of... you can't, it's almost like he's trying to find a toehold here with like, this seems really inappropriate that Bernie Sanders and the extreme liberal left is with the Republican leadership. I mean, he can't quite figure out like where he fits in.
Isn't that what he's supposed to support? I thought he was like, I'm in the middle, guys. So if in theory Bernie is working with Mitch McConnell, which we know that's not the case, it's just like they're not going to agree to anything in terms of like a reconciliation package here, but like if that was the case, that's supposed to be his brand, right? Everyone coming together.
Maybe that's what offends him so much. It's reaching across the aisle. It's bipartisanship. I can't believe Joe Manchin has come out against
bipartisanship
crossing the aisle.
Right.
This is what his whole career has been about, bringing these two sides together.
Yeah. Meeting in the middle.
And we should be clear.
It's funny too, because it's like in one breath, he's like, it's personal revenge politics against me that Bernie Sanders has never supported permitting reform.
Right.
What?
Bernie had the ability and the foresight to know that he should start his career 40 years ago, 30 years ago in the House, specifically against permitting reforms, because someday it was going to bite Joe Manchin in the ass. And we should be clear. There is absolutely no indication, and I would highly doubt, if Bernie Sanders was having conversations with Mitch McConnell about this. Mm. I think it's Bernie Sanders had this position from get-go. There is clearly personal animosity here between these two. It's been here for a while. Sanders has been pissed at Manchin for vehemently for over a year now. Mm. And this is not, and I think for Bernie Sanders, like you say, he's been against this forever. It has nothing to do with whoever's bringing up the bill. On the Republican side, I think it very much is. Like, we're going to punish Joe Manchin for not towing the line here. Yeah. And to be clear, I don't think they're communicating, but Sanders has made it clear, I'm not voting for cloture. Yeah. So if you need 10 votes, now you need 11. And that's all, right? I mean, it's really the Republicans who are not helping him out here, because if they could get 10, they could probably get 11.
Right.
But and so apparently, like, Schumer has scheduled the cloture vote for Tuesday night. And it sounds like that he is prepared for that cloture to fail and then reintroduce the bill without Manchin's rider. He's going to introduce it with Manchin's rider.
Hey, I gave it the old college try. And and we should say it's not just Bernie who's opposing it, too. There's like at least 8 or 6 Democratic senators who say that they're kind of against it. Warren, Merkley, Markey, et cetera. So it's not just one that they have to overcome, you know. But sorry, go on.
I mean, and this is encouraging, right? I mean, this is a... It really is a function of the Republicans, but it is a good thing for the progressive wing of the party to be able to do this. It seems to me, and Manchin doesn't really have the ability to take this out on Democrats in the event that they still hold the Senate. Right, like Schumer's doing his job. You know, he's the concierge of the Senate, and he's got Joe Manchin the tickets to the Broadway production. It's just that the play was canceled because of COVID. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Schumer, right, and Joe Manchin's kind of, I mean, he's in the unusual for him position of wanting something that other people can say no to, instead of being the no himself. he is like, welcome to how you make the Senate work. You want something to happen, and other people aren't allowing it. And Schumer's just gonna say, all right, look, we gave it a shot. Like, can't get anything through. Sorry, man. Sorry, pal. But yeah, I mean, it's it's a little bit of taste of his own medicine to some extent.
I hope he comes out for filibuster reform.
Yeah, seriously.
Because this is, if we're going to get this type of permitting reform, we really need to get the filibuster.
Yeah, exactly. Why can just a few recalcitrant Democrats block this priority?
But I mean, honestly, this really is the best case scenario for the Democrats, because it sidesteps any type of like, major issues where the progressives are blamed for the government shutting down. Mm-hmm. It gives Schumer an out. Mm-hmm. It maintains all of the relationships that you possibly, you know, as well as they could be maintained in the event that the Democrats retain the Senate with no margin. Mm-hmm. If they retain the Senate with any margin, I think, you know, it's not unreasonable to expect that they could get two Senate seats, and Manchin then becomes far less relevant.
Yeah. That's the dream.
That is the dream, right? And so this is, I don't know, this is one of those times, knock on wood, hopefully it holds, that things went the right way. It's good to hear. We should just say that apparently YouTube is all the way down.
Oh, wow.
Across the board. I would tell our YouTubers, and maybe we can put this in the that they can go and watch on Twitch. Yep. Maybe we can put that in the show description.
Yep. In the chat too. There's still people.
Yep, folks, you can go to Twitch to see us live there, and then if you have one of those Amazon Prime things. Apparently, like,
there is a hype train going on right now. Actually,
oh, we got a big hype train
going.
Yep. Poggers and folks can subscribe to the show and dedicate part of their Amazon Prime to supporting the program via Twitch. Let's also, I want to play this clip too. This is also interesting because the other sort of big story right now is that, Trump's in some legal jeopardy, it feels like. And oddly, for something that I don't think anyone would have contemplated 2 months ago, which is the most sort of bizarre of his I feel like law breaking. Like he had multiple ways of having done what he's already done and just walking away without anybody knowing about it. Mm-hmm. Which was like giving the FBI back the United States government's documents. Like, and he could have, here's the amazing thing. He could have photocopied them all.
Yeah.
If he wanted to. And maybe he did. And he's got them, you know, this is all like dummy documents. Like, oh yeah, we'll go through this is all sort of like a limited hangout by Trump because he's got all the documents photocopied. I mean, which leads me to believe that maybe there's something a little bit less nefarious going on here, but he refused to return the documents that belong to the U.S. government. He can't get a decent lawyer, and he's in like some serious legal jeopardy, it feels like now. Also, Letitia James is bringing a civil suit against Trump Inc., which is also noteworthy because no one's done this in the history of New York State and New York City, where I gotta believe there's been decades of opportunity to do something like this.
Well, she in her suit cites over like 200 instances of him either inflating the values of his properties to get more favorable bank loans or insurance rates and then deflating it for tax purposes, which means that and Trump Organization, which means there's like a wealth of information. And she's recommending that the IRS take it up criminally. So that's like a whole nother wrinkle to this that I feel like, I mean, still we're not really grappling with the extent of it because he's been Teflon up to this point.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I still go back to what Wayne Barrett was saying on this program and in conversations I had with him prior to his death in the run-up to the election. He died the day before Donald Trump was elected.
That's right.
And I don't know that there was a single reporter in the country who knew more about Donald Trump. And the thing that Barrett used to say over and over again was Felix Sater, Felix Sater, Felix Sater. That was – and Felix Sater, for people who have forgotten, because he seems to have like completely left the national stage, Felix Sater was a guy who – at least if you're going to believe Loretta Lynch, was that the former U.S. Attorney General under Obama?
Yeah.
She wrote an affidavit in support of, on his behalf for a court case when Sater had stabbed somebody with a champagne flute, and saying that he was a key asset and informant for the FBI. And there's also indications of the CIA, and there's some claim that he was one of the people who secured bin Laden's cell phone number for the CIA, that he was essentially an informant for money laundering that was coming into this country. He also, maybe not so coincidentally, worked for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Had a card, had the Trump Organization. Had a couple of real estate deals, and you start to put these things together as to why Donald Trump was never prosecuted,
right?
By the Manhattan District Attorney, by the State Attorney General, never mind the feds as well.
Yep.
Over the course of 30 or 40 years, where he would have been a great target if you wanted to go through politics, and it's almost as if a curtain was lifted, or people got a certain amount of distance into this. Then they stopped all investigations of Trump at certain points because that didn't happen this time with the New York State Attorney General.
Yeah.
So very, very interesting that this stuff is moving forward. And I want to circle back to that because it really gets to where are we headed? Pretty soon, it feels like Donald Trump at one point is going to announce that he's going to run. He doesn't want to give up that super PAC money, though, that is paying for his criminal defense at this point. But
did you see it raise $40 last month? Something like that?
$40?
Yes. $40. Oh, that was in the packet yesterday.
Yeah, the Financial Times reported that for the month of August, the Save America PAC earned $40. 40. 40.
I wonder if that's net. I mean, because it could be spreading around a lot.
Right.
But we're seeing the first public, expression of the race between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. And here it is. We had been speculating because we played two different clips over the past week of Sean Hannity. One was when he had Ted Cruz on. From Texas. One was when he had two Texas state reps, I think it was, on where he basically walked both his guests into essentially declaring that if you transport migrants from one state to another under false pretenses, you're breaking the law. And he didn't say the word DeSantis.
Yeah.
And he didn't say that, but here is another, and I include Sean Hannity in this category, Trump surrogate going out and saying essentially the same thing. They want DeSantis to have his legal troubles too.
I personally watch what's happening, and it's very hard to see at the southern border. We have to remember these are human beings, they're people, so seeing them being used as political pawns one way or the other is very troubling to me. But I do think that if you go back to the time under President Trump, we had the lowest border crossings in history when he turned over the administration. and the border was secure, was very safe. And people don't talk enough about the fact that these people are lured in to these journeys by the coyotes. They're paying a lot of money. I think 80% of women are sexually assaulted along the way. They come into America. They don't have papers. Many of them are exploited, put into human trafficking and modern slavery in a lot of ways. So it's a very sad situation. I think the policies that President Trump was trying to put forward on figuring out how to create a secure border, a merit-based immigration system, having rule and law and order, were very important policies that unfortunately was just totally disregarded and reversed day one. And now we're seeing the unfortunate humanitarian catastrophe that comes because of that.
Yeah, so, you know, that thing where they're lured in and they're transported around and used as political, yeah. I mean.
Yeah, that's not, just simply not as humane as Donald Trump's famously immigrant-friendly platform yeah. and administration.
Compassionate conservative Donald Trump, right? That's how he ran.
We all remember that. Let's treat these people as humans with dignity. That was his big rallying cry, right?
Right. I remember when he came down the golden escalator and talked about how they're sending over the rapists and the drug runners from Mexico. I'm sure some of them are good people. But we're starting to see like the Trump DeSantis thing like emerge at this point. You know, we heard these stories that Trump was pissed and this and that. Where do you think this goes if Trump does get indicted somewhere? Right. Like, I don't think that prevents you from running for president. Don't you? Yeah, I mean, you can be indicted and run for president. And on some level, like, that could be the best defense that you have, at least to draw things out a little bit.
His poll numbers, by the way, haven't moved like in the midst of these investigations. So that's, I mean, like, it's not going to prevent.
I mean, yeah,
they haven't moved in years.
Yeah,
like
right?
They're rock solid. They're still, you know, they're not a majority of the Republican, but they're a plurality of the Republican mm-hmm. Party.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the running for president is kind of a legal defense strategy for Donald Trump. I mean, as I think you sort of alluded to. And especially considering the civil case in New York, considering that the goal of it, as far as I can tell, is to prevent him and his family from doing business in New York, considering that seems to like to actually bar them from running their business, running for president is kind of what the family needs to put food on the table, I think. I mean, and, you know, it's a little, I guess it's not a new observation about him, but he does seem to think that he needs to get back into power to, I think, get the wolves off his back, right? Like being president is a way to avoid all of these sort of troubles he has been successfully dodging for years now.
I also think that like it's not just for him. I don't think it's just like, I got to be president again because I don't want to go to jail. I think he also like, it's hard to imagine this guy doesn't think that he's not president now.
Mm. Right.
I mean, with the way that he's
lost,
acting, like,
that's a huge like threat to his ego.
His brain's not built to compute the fact that he lost, right? You hear reports about when the initial results came in and he kind of understood, okay, I'd lost. But it's like it took around 24 hours for Mike Lindell and Sidney Powell and all these other people to come around and just like it was, his brain was primed to hear what they had to say, and now he's entirely convinced of it. It seems.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there was probably this like, you know, whatever window where the old, more rational Trump was just like, all right, I had a good run, you know, but then he's like completely, you know, like completely turned around and is now 100% certain. Because, you know, I think too, like, he can't believe Joe Biden beat him, right? Mm. Like, 99-year-old Joe Biden, like, he just can't, he can't process that guy beat him.
The only guy older than me.
But yeah, and yeah, I mean, I do. Yeah, I think he's going to run again. But I also think like people have to remember the how much fun he had running before, when especially when he was running against Republicans that first time.
Yeah,
like that was actually like a good time for him, because he again, like that's when he was just running roughshod over the party, like gleefully destroying all of the other Republican candidates, and then like making them bow down to him. But that's the best time he had. That was more fun than being president for him.
Yeah.
I mean, if he wants to recapture that magic, like, of course he's gonna, I mean, going after DeSantis is good. Like, he has to be just looking forward to that.
It's like the WWE stuff. He wants to he wants to trash talk for a living. And he got that when he was in the primary. I mean, that was the most fun part for me too.
That was the last time I had fun, period.
Right. Right. What lastly, let me ask you this. He came out really explicitly now with the Q stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, he was in a rally, and I guess maybe this is a week ago in Ohio, where he's literally playing the Q song in the background and having everybody do the phone home. Well, the one finger salute, which I don't know. I was reading a Twitter thread that said, you know, this is a little bit more fash than you actually even think it might be. but with that said, like he's not sort of like dog whistling it. I wonder what's your sense of that? Like, because it seems to be early in the game to do it. It's almost as if he was like, let's see if I can get away with this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it seems like he did.
Yeah.
Like there was a time where he may have been like, I just got to be cagey about the Q thing.
Yeah, I got to
wait. Who are they? They're against pedophilia. That seems like a good thing. Is that not? But now I think he feels like I can go full on Q. And there's no price to be paid.
Yeah.
Like so much of Trump's evolution as president seemed like that last year he was president, he just said, like, wait a second. I don't have to listen to anybody. I can just get my people in and I'm off to the races. I can do whatever I want. I can declassify things with my mind. I can I can bring this stuff home. I can basically, I mean, he's like, to the extent that there were ever shackles, they seem like they're completely gone now.
Yeah. And I've always wondered, I've always wanted to hear Trump's own understanding of what Q is, right? I would like to hear it in his own words. I wonder who first briefed him on it. You know, when you are the sort of god hero of a bizarre conspiracy theory, you have to have some understanding of the parts of it that are perhaps exaggerated or fictional. I don't know. I think you are right that he no longer perceives that there's any way he will suffer politically for saying or doing anything. You know, genuinely, who knows how he even understands what he is sort of playing with right now.
Right. I don't think he cares. I think for him,
it's
just like, I move stakes. I move, Trump University numbers and I sell to Q. It's all right. It's all the same. Alex Perrine, always a pleasure to talk to you next time we're on. Can't wait to hear you play something for us.
Of course, yeah, I'll have something prepared.
All right. The host, or co-host, I should say, of the Politics of Everything, contributing editor at the New Republic. And folks, you can sign up. We'll have a link to the ap.substack.com. Your newsletter, that's still in operation, right?
Oh, yeah. It's still all right.
Great, folks. You can check it out. The AP, the good one. Alex Breen, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you. See you later.
Later.
All right, folks.
We are back on YouTube.
We're back on YouTube.
Yay.
Well, we had a hype train going level 5, I believe, on Twitch.
Not to brag.
YouTube started to sweat. They're thinking we're going to lose all the audience. And
there you go.
They figured it out.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Judy Gold will be here.
Yay. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland, on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest needs no introduction. However, we have an entire song introducing her.
Level-headed.
Fuck you!
Calm, cool, and collected.
I have a bigger penis than him.
Judy Gold is on the line to keep us all connected.
The fuck is the matter with them?
A steady hand to guide us. She'll keep us calm and carry on.
No fucking way!
Too bad Jimmy Reefer Cuck didn't find her worthy of a song. Well, Judy Gold.
And he's such a fucking penis head liar. That I'm not kidding. That's the president of the United States. That's the president. What the fuck? Like, this guy, how did this happen?
I'm a mother, okay? That's pathetic.
I want to, speaking of which, that's a great place to start. Congratulations. Somebody made team captain as a junior, is my understanding.
Yes, you know what, Sam? I have such nachas. So Ben, who plays at Trinity in Hartford, made team captain as a junior. And yesterday I was doing a local radio show in Connecticut for a gig that I have coming up on October 6th at the Wall Street Theater in Norwalk. Anyway, but with Jessica Carson. Anyway, so I was doing this radio to promote it, and the guy was like, our next guest is an author, you know, podcaster, writer, comedian. Please welcome to the show Ben Callahan Gold's mother.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was, and then I called Ben and told him, he goes, well, how did that make you feel? He's studying psychology. Okay.
why would your child
be
interested in going into psychology? Why would that be the case?
I know. And he said to me, I grew up with three crazy people and I'm the only normal one and I have to study psychology. But it's really annoying to fight with him now. Cause it's like, well, you're displacing that's displacement. That's projection. I'm like, no, let me just be horrible. Okay. For 1 minute and then we'll get over it.
Judy, did you know that Trinity is Tucker Carlson's alma mater?
I know, you know, shut up, Emma.
Well, okay. I'm just,
I know, but there's a lot of white. Yes. And you know, it's funny because, you know, he plays basketball and he doesn't hang around with all the entitled white things, but things. The first thing he said when he got there was, mommy, you can't believe these cars. These people have like their parents lease like a Range Rover for a year and then give it to their kids. Like he's just like the entitlement. He is really aware of it. Thank God. But yeah, it's crazy. I mean, he's been on basketball teams, you know, his entire life. He has seen poverty, kids who can't pay for stuff that, you know, dinners, or he's very aware of it. And it's gross. But then again, you know, he's like, oh yeah, I want to get this. Like, he'll be like, he'll lose his AirPods and be like, oh, come on, mommy. It's like, what is it? $120. I'm like, yeah, it's $100. Like that kind of stuff annoys me, but he's very aware of, you know, income inequality.
I was just wondering if there's like any acknowledgement of Tucker Carlson on the campus, just given like he's pretty prominent alumni, but I don't know if they'd be proud to advertise that.
They would.
Oh, okay. I don't know the vibes.
But he'll say to me, I went over to this guy's house and I think he's a Republican. Like he'll say that. I have trained them. trained them. Now, before we began, I was talking about how Sam looks really good and that he's aging really well. Mm-hmm. And then Emma was like, I hate men. And it's true. You guys don't have to deal with half the shit, 90% of the shit we have to deal with. You have solutions. If you're going bald, you shave your head. If your chin is hanging, you get a beard. You know, like we have nothing. It's not fair.
My chin was hanging. I got a beard. And it worked. Can't even see it now.
Was it really hanging?
What do you mean by hanging?
Like this stuff under here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had work done, and I'm waiting for it to heal. And
you so, did?
Yeah. A little tuck.
No, you didn't.
In the scar. No,
I didn't. But, God. I mean, maybe. I'm thinking about it.
I don't know
I'm
what
start
to
with
do.
My hamstring.
He's having reconstructed.
How'd you screw up your hamstring?
Well, I was playing softball, and I spared somebody's life. Basically, I was running into.
Okay, first of all, you're not sparing someone's life if you're playing softball. Okay,
I was playing third base. Scooped mm-hmm. It was the last play of the game. Two outs. Scooped up the ball. Was going to just tag the base. Realized the guy's coming in hard. He slides. He is. First off, he's about half my size, and he is older than me, so he's old. And
this sounds like a really.
I got
really...
cleats on, and the I tag him, and my next step is basically on his chest, and I avoid doing that, and in attempting to avoid doing that, I really messed up my
you
hamstring.
Sacrificed
this
yourself
3 weeks ago, and I still can't. Like,
okay, I have
a to stand up in between guests because I'm in pain.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah,
you're playing softball mm-hmm. with a 90-year-old man. Okay,
I mean, 80s.
And you're wearing cleats? Like, what is that?
Well, they're not steel cleats.
Oh, God. Where's the softball league?
Well, it's in Prospect Park. Well, actually, we play, I mean, Prospect Park, but sometimes we play out.
Don't reveal this. You shouldn't just tell people this, right? Well, where you're going to be.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's out in Bay Ridge. I mean, there's a lot of different.
Okay, it's in Connecticut, New Jersey. Okay, we got it.
Yes.
Right, tri-state area.
And is that your big exercise, this is what I do for myself thing?
Playing softball occasionally with 95-year-old yeah,
people from the Hebrew Home for the Aged?
Okay. Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
That's great.
I challenge folks at the nursing home, and it makes me feel good.
It's good.
It makes me feel good. Listen, that I'm actually playing well.
I would like to tell Matt and Emma and Sam and whoever's sitting next to Matt.
Bradley.
Bradley. He writes me. Sorry, Bradley. I'm sorry. I'm such an idiot. Anyway, I have to say that when I do gigs, and no matter where they are, I have at least one audience member come up to me and say, when are you going to be on the Majority Report again? I love you on the Majority Report. Thank you for screaming on the Majority Report. You are my conscience on the Majority. I just want you to know that. Like, the gays love you.
The gays love me?
The gays, the people who read. You got a good following, Samuel.
It's funny that you say that, because I remember doing stand-up, now must have been 30 years ago, close to it, 25 years ago, at, I can't remember the name of that Chinese restaurant on Route 1 up in Massachusetts.
Calhoun's. Calhoun's.
Yes.
I
knew
love
you
that
know
place.
That.
Yeah.
And I remember I had some joke, I can't remember what it was, but referencing a book. And I heard some guy in the first row, because you're right, there's no real, it's not a real comedy club. It's like a restaurant,
right.
But they have a guy sitting right in front of me, and it's not dark in the audience. Like, the difference between
right.
the stage and the audience, the lighting is on. And I just watched the guy turn to his friend and goes, like, I told you it was a fact.
Oh.
Like, literally, I'm talking about is I'm referencing a book.
Right.
That's what it was like in Quincy back in 1991.
It's unbelievable. But I guess I have readers that come to my shows because. Yep. But that's how people don't realize that's what we had to do. We had to go in front of those people who are now MAGA people, probably.
Yeah.
And make them laugh. But I don't know. It made you. I think it definitely made you stronger as a performer. To be able to through that shit.
I just realized, like, I'm not going to do stand-up anymore.
Right.
Ultimately, that's basically...
It's hard. It's hard until you start booking gigs and the people come who know you.
Right. That everything changes in that
right.
At that point. When you get some measure of celebrity or fame and people know what they're expecting when they get there, there's a lot of that comedy is there's a level of confidence that they have in you that you're funny, and then
right,
they're more
trust
apt
you.
To laugh.
Yeah. Right, and they know what they're getting. It's like when someone brings someone and they're like, oh my God, and you're like, get the fuck out of here. Like, bye. If you know, I don't know if you know, I wrote a book called Yes, I Can Say That.
I mentioned that at the top of the show.
Yeah, and so I'm writing a show right now, a stage show based on the book, and it's so much more than the book, as I realize, as I delve into my real feelings about comedy and satire and the importance of it. And it's not only about, yes, I can say that. It's also about do your due diligence, learn our history. Like, you know, people get offended by proxy because they've lived for 20 years. They don't know what it's like when you're in your mid 20s and all your friends are sick and dying of it. Like, you don't know that. That makes you into a different person and gives you the, it's not the responsibility. It's the permission to say what you want to say. And I'm sick of it. And I'm sick of it. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of shitty comedy too.
All right. Well, let's expand on this. Like, what's going on out there? Because I got to be honest with you. I
You left.
I don't really pay attention to what's going on in the comedy world that often. Like lately I've been trying occasionally to go see some stand up if it's super convenient, but
thanks so much for being at my show.
But if it's
here's like, what it is.
What's going on out there with comedy right now, Judy?
There's a lot of stand-ups. There's a lot of comedians. And there's a lot of people who here's what's happening. Social media has made huge stars of people who are not ready to headline a club, but they will sell the club out. So they will get the gigs rather than a Dom Irrera. Dom Irrera works all the time, but I'm talking about one of the greatest comics, club comics of all time, Dom Irrera.
It used to be, for the most part, it used to be the only way you're going to get a headline, and there's a middler and there's an opener. The only way you're going to get a headline is if you've done it for at least 5 or 7 years and you've developed
15.
I know people after 5 or 7 years,
that was then when we weren't staring at our fucking phones all the time. We were going out and doing sets every night and writing jokes, and we weren't sitting on a couch and like, hey, come over, let's do a podcast. And we talk about like how my farts smell different than your farts.
Right. But you would have to I don't know how many hours, but you had to have thousands of hours under your belt going out to develop that skill set and to get booked that way, because that was the only way.
And same.
You didn't have an opportunity to build an audience unless you had been on a TV show or something.
Right. Thank God for those Caroline Comedy Hours and the VH1 stand up spotlights and the improv, evening of the improvs. Like, you did your 6 minutes and then you went away and did another, tried to perfect another 6 minutes, and you just kept writing and writing and writing and traveling. And we had no phones. We had no cell phones. We had no computers. It was us and our fucking notebook, and you couldn't call your family or your friends because that would eat up the entire salary if you used a fucking hotel phone. And it was lonely, but you did your fucking work. And I had one suitcase that was like a junk drawer with my books. I would bring my clarinet. You had to do the work. You know, when you auditioned for SNL, it was like they came to the club, you had a spot. Didn't matter who went on before you, who went on after you, who fucking puked in the middle of the audience. You had to do it. That was it. You had one shot and you had to be prepared. Okay. That's my diatribe. But I love, there's so many good younger comics too. There's so many great ones, but I love stand up, and that's why it's heart wrenching.
Well, because what you see I would imagine it is much rarer now to see a stand-up who is headlining who has anywhere near the experience that a headliner would have 25 years ago.
Right.
And therefore, the quality of the stand-up, more often than not, is not there, because it takes, you can headline, even back then, like you could headline after 5 or 7 years, but you weren't really good. Like, there are stages you go through, right? Like, first time you go up, you're just copying Rodney Dangerfield. And then you get in there and you're starting to copy other people, or you've absorbed it. And then it takes like years and years until you click into like, oh, this is
your point of view. Okay. First of all, I never copied Rodney Dangerfield. Maybe that's what you did, but it's true. You get up there, you don't know what the fuck you're doing. And how do you learn? You go everywhere and you get on a stage and you try shit out and you work and you work and you work. But now it's about making content on the internet. And, let's do a funny video. And some comics are great at that. God bless them. And some comics are not. And when people go to comedy clubs and see someone who's not ready, how do they leave? Do they leave going, oh, I don't really like stand-up? That's the thing. The rules changed. And I don't think they changed for the better.
Does it change, like, in terms of who gets booked where based on the
yes!
social media following?
At 150,000. It happens at Broadway. Think of all these people who go to conservatory and they're so fucking talented and they're ready for their, you know, their big break to be cast in some huge musical. And they're like, let's give it, you know, to TV star who knows how to sing a little.
Yeah, well.
Everything
is cheapened. It's like, it's the reason that fucker became president.
We do live in a very different sort of like, the celebrity has become a far more, well, attainable in a small way.
You don't have to do anything. You don't have to fucking do anything to be a celebrity. You know, there's people on the fucking TikTok that sit there and eat. And then they have like a million followers. Oh, what are you eating today? And then they sit there and eat their meal. And then they're like huge stars. It's fucking. And then I'm like, wait, should I have just like put a video camera while we were eating dinner? And I would have been a huge fucking star. Like, I don't know. Am I bitter? I don't think I'm bitter because I still love getting on that fucking subway with my notebook and going downtown and doing my sets.
Well, I mean, you know, but to be fair, also, like, you know, if you were around 50 years ago, you would have been like, there's no comedy clubs. Today, these people are so spoiled. They're, you know, like, I had to go in and I had to play a strip club and I would have to pay. And then I have to go up to the freaking Catskills.
I went to the Cat. Didn't you go to the Catskills?
I never did was around New England. And I only did stand up for, you know, in earnest for like, maybe 5 or 6 years. When I came down to New York, I just did rooms like Rebar and Luna because I was more interested in like writing and directing, like stand up. Every time I would do stand up, if I just the idea of doing the same jokes every time I got up there just drove me nuts.
Right.
And I had admiration for people up there who go and work the craft. But for me, it was just like, I want to do weirder stuff. And that's what I did. And that's why I ended up just, you know, when I had the opportunity to direct and write, that was my.
Right. But a lot of people did stand up and then ventured off into, oh, okay, I have this writing ability. I don't necessarily think this is the art form that is best for my comedy.
Right.
I'm going to go here. And that's fine. There were plenty of people who did that. But the ones who decided, you know, I want to be on stage in front of a live audience and work this shit out until it's fucking perfect. I don't know. The work ethic is different now. It's totally different. And
well, it's because the opportunities are different. I mean, the technology has changed. Like, you know, I used to shoot video on these big VHS cameras and do editing.
Right.
Literally VHS to VHS. And then we would play it at Catch a Rising Star in Boston for Cross Comedy. And then it was done. I would show it one time. Right. And I had spent like hours on this thing and shot it for 60 seconds or 3 minutes. And you show it one time. Maybe we could convince everybody, like, let's play it again in 3 weeks in this context or something like that. And there was no other way to show it to anybody. There was no internet. There was no YouTube. There was nothing.
Right. I remember when
some of those things, it's pretty good that nobody.
Yeah, you should put it up. I think the one person, I know you can't now because you can't say anything anymore, but the one person who I think did social media 1000% correct is Randy Rainbow. And because he is such an original and his creations are perfect and he is a satirist and he's smart and he's just fucking great. He's not a stand-up comic, but you know, I see you go on the internet. Like, do you remember how someone would do a TV show and do their set and then they couldn't go to the club after that Tonight Show set and do those jokes anymore? They were retired.
Jokes were retired, yes, because then people would complain, or you'd have to sprinkle them out within the course of an hour or something like that.
Right, right. And now it's like, oh, these jokes will live on forever because I can just sit here and talk about my hairy balls, you know, and get people to, and, but I don't know. It's just hard. It's hard because you're like, should I put this on the internet? Is then it's dead. I can't use it anymore. It's part of a bigger bit. Things are taken out of context. I don't know. It's just, I love stand up. And I love that, you know, look, we are in a fucking crisis in this country. And what speaks to me? George Carlin speaks to me. Richard Pryor speaks to me. You know, Richard Pryor, after George Floyd was murdered, number 7 download was one of his bits from, N versus the Police. And George Carlin, the shit, you go back and watch all his stuff and it's still relevant today. And I don't know.
This is a broader change in culture. I mean, you know, and
but everyone's dumb, Sam. People are dumb. People are voting for that motherfucker and the fucking Santas, that fucking, like, the fact that you can look at a video and say, well, let me show you the video. This happened. And then they can go, well, that actually didn't happen. Well, I just showed you what happened. No, it didn't. Okay. No, it didn't. And we're going to go break all the windows in the Capitol. Like, I can't. I saw this thing the other day on the internet, the Twitter, and it said, and this is my generation. I was taught to speak to the, you know, CEO of, you know, my life or some big, huge, powerful CEO, the same way I spoke to the janitor at my school. That is how I was taught.
Okay.
And now we have these people whose speech is dangerous, incites violence, kills people, you know, and they like, come on, Sam, you know, these stupid Marjorie Taylor Greene bullshit. Like, that's her trying to do stand up. His fucking rallies are him trying to do fucking stand up. And they're
without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Like, if he gets a fucking laugh, like, oh, yeah, I said to him, you know, when you take the prisoner in, don't put your hand on the head. Let him fucking... Blah, 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 blah. And then he gets a laugh, and then he says that at every fucking stupid one of his Nazi rallies.
What did that come back to?
Emma, why do you leave? Did you leave during the last guest?
No, because...
Did you have to urinate?
I did. Okay. And usually, we go to the fun half a little after one. That's my time for that. But no, we're extending the free half of the program for you, Judy.
I love you. Is there a speaker in the bathroom?
There's not, so I didn't hear any of that.
We should actually, maybe we should do something like that.
Yeah, right. Headphones attached to the side of the
toilet. Yes.
Mm.
But Judy, all right, first off, and somebody just made the point, and I was just about to say, like, these idiots have existed in this country always, and most of them are not your audience. I have some sympathy for the lamentation of like a stand up as an art form, but it's not, you know, things evolve and, you know, it'll find its equilibrium, right? Like where there'll be people who are still sort of dedicated to the craft, on some level, but there are other ways in which people can go. Certainly stand up evolved. During the era of Carlin and Pryor, there wasn't as many opportunities to use stand-up as a vehicle to get a sitcom. We went through that period.
Right. We
went through that period.
That is very true, Sam.
And
that's
now everybody's British on all the programs and, you know, just pretending that they're American. Like, you
they're
know,
right.
You,
because
you go
that's right, Sam, you, because...
You go through these things.
Yes,
but let me just say this.
Yes, okay.
But there's also a phenomenon that I'm also noticing, okay, where some comedians are out there and are taking advantage is the wrong way to put it. Well, no, they're availing themselves of the opportunity to become the comedians that appeal to the right. That, like, you know, in a way, you know, and maybe there's some of that on the left as well, but not as many, right? Like, you know, I don't want to name any names, although Nick DiPaolo did have a tweet the other day that was appalling.
The thing, Can we talk about Nick? Or are we not allowed to? I love Nick. I've known Nick for 30 fucking years. 30 plus. What happened?
Well,
you don't have to be hate.
You know what? I take issue with what happened, and I'll tell you why. I think what happened was he just feels more comfortable and is getting rewarded for saying out loud. Because you and I did a TV show together
yep.
in 1999, I think mm-hmm. it was, Beat Cops. And I don't think you and Nick were on set at the same time, but I cast you as a UPS driver
yes,
or something like that.
Yes.
And Nick was cast as a cop. And I was talking to Nick on that show, and I remember this vividly, and I've mentioned it. And I had just, you know, I had been back and forth to L.A. and was doing a lot of sitcom work at that time because I was, you know, lucky to be flavor
Young,
of the day.
Handsome.
Well, Jewy. You know, yeah, I mean, Jewy. It was like, it was in the wake of like the biggest sitcoms were,
right,
you know,
right.
Schwimmer and Seinfeld right. and Paul Reiser and Jonathan Silverman and, yeah. And, you know, all they do is try and copy, success in that way. And I'm talking to Nick, who just on his face, like he like is a caricature. He like almost a
yes,
caricature,
yes.
but he's a character. Like, and there was always a character like that almost in every sitcom I did. I think I did 10, 11 pilots. And I would say at least half of them, there was a Nick DiPaolo type guy, you know, from Brooklyn or from wherever,
right,
you know,
right.
from like this, you know, like a,
yeah,
like
yeah,
a toughie
yeah.
and, you know, and he says to me, I remember this so vividly because I was just absolutely floored. And of course, you know, I'm directing him in this thing and I
right.
don't want to like, just like whatever. And I'm like, he's just moved back from LA. And he's like, I'm like, so you're going back and forth? He's like, I can't stand it out there. You can't get a job if you're a white guy. And I'm like, are you like, I you know, if I wasn't, if him performing in the next scene, if it wasn't contingent upon, I'm like, are you effing kidding me?
Right, right, right.
Like, dude, like, I can't go into a, like, there's so many roles I've seen for exactly you. It's just like,
right.
you can't act. I'm sorry, like
right.
you know, and I had been directing him and trying to get him just to, like, just be yourself. All you got to do, the only difference is you're on a bike and you're wearing a cop's outfit. Just
right.
be the a-hole that you are, as
right.
though you could barely pull that off. And so, like, when I saw that tweet, and he it was something basically like some video of, like, I think it was on a cruise ship of a big fight that broke out. Most of the people were black, I guess, on the cruise ship. And he's like, nice culture or something like that.
Yeah.
And all you need to do is, like, spend 4 seconds on Google to find people outside of Fenway Park tearing down, you know, in
yeah.
Boston, like all white guys. Like,
right.
you know, it's just full on naked racism. And
and it's really upsetting because I haven't seen him in a while, but. We've always disagreed about everything, but I love the guy. I mean, and he's funny. And I was like, okay, you are from a completely different whatever, but I'm pretty open about that, except it's become like the hate. That's what I don't like is the true hate and the racism, because now it's just racism. It's not funny, you know? And also these white guys complaining. Try being a fucking gigantic lesbian Jew in this business, okay?
I mean,
I never went around going, it's so hard for the lesbian Jew, it's so hard for women. I just was like, okay, move next.
Oh, yeah, or try be anything other than someone who looked like me,
right.
frankly, in, you know, through the 80s,
right.
the 90s, like... Like all those guys who I worked with on this show called The Show, Fox shows,
predominantly,
black folks. And, you know, for me after that, I was like, I could go anywhere. I could take any
right.
audition, this and that. And most of these guys, incredibly talented. And that was it. There was just not many opportunities, because most of the people writing the shows, frankly, were like me, but just, you know, 20 years older and had lost their hair.
Right.
That was basically it. And I walk in and I'm like, okay. And that's how the system worked. And they always knew a guy like DiPaolo, and that's why there was a character like that in it.
Right.
But you know, and so I wasn't terribly surprised by that, yeah. I should
and
say.
And the thing
because,
is about him, too, so handsome.
But
like so movie star handsome. Okay,
he
sorry.
Was very very handsome at the time too. And but there's a lot of guys, and I do mean guys, who have like they're resuscitating their career by getting on that circuit.
Right.
And it is they're making a lot of money that way.
Yeah, Tim Allen, Rob Schneider. Rob, I loved working with. You know what? I must be so gullible. You know, I grew up in the clubs with these guys, and it didn't matter to me. You know, we were just comics. You know, trying to be funny and get on stage. And now, it's hate. It's like it really is racism, and hate, and I yeah.
I mean, and it's
sad.
It, yeah. And
and I just want to, can I say one thing about the thing you said, which really makes so much sense? It's true. You know, we had, you know, Mark Twain, and now he's being censored. Huckleberry Finn is being banned. We had all these satirists. And then we had the stand-ups, and this is all, an extension, I think a natural extension of our First Amendment rights. And then we had, you know, the Carlins and the Moms Mabley and Jean Carroll and Toadie Field, like all these women and men and Phyllis Diller, and they were just doing stand-up. And then that's right. One person got a sitcom, and there was an entire generation of stand-ups writing material for a network executive. Like that went on for like 15 years where people were like, say I live at home with my parents and they're like pains in the ass. And then, you know, I have diabetes and, it's really hard for me. All right. No one had a diabetes.
That's the show right there.
Yeah.
He's got diabetes and he's living with his girlfriend.
So he's got diabetes and then we're going to get the people with diabetes in. And they're, you know, and then it was, I'm 12 and I'm a doctor and I'm this. It was like, and now. Where it's like, you're right. You really made me think like, okay, the next progression was social media, this bloatation device that became, reality TV and this bloatation device that who became president said, I can say whatever the fuck I want and still have power. And you're right. This is like, I feel like it's a natural progression from this horrible.
And when we talk about like censoring too, that's none of this is new either. It's just to the extent that there's any societal pressure. Well, first of all, let's just make a distinction between government censorship, which is First Amendment implicated, and audiences deciding I don't feel comfortable with this.
Right.
And when you look back on, when we had government censorship, they are dragging Lenny Bruce out of a club in Chicago because he's talking about, Catholic people in a way that they don't appreciate.
Segregation, and Vietnam War. But they get him on the fucking shit and fuck and crap.
Yeah. Well, they also, it was the Catholic stuff too in Chicago. And they didn't like it when he was talking about JFK. And he said stuff, and he had bits that today, I think people would be like, you can't say that. Like he had a very famous bit about saying the N-word, and his whole theory was, and it was a theory that I think I, on some level, like at least appreciated at one point, which was that this word can be reappropriated. And we saw this in the gay community where they reappropriated queer, right?
Right.
But he had this theory that, the N-word could be reappropriated. The bit was, if I remember correctly, like, I don't know, Kennedy could come out and say, like, every one of his members of his cabinet are, this is my N-word, this and this and that. And he kept saying the word over and over again. He said, like, we can make it lose its meaning. And I think, there's a sense of like, well, it turns out that A, there's enough people who still perceive it as having the meaning that he wanted to get rid of.
Right.
And that opportunity to reappropriate the word, it's one thing when black people reappropriate it,
right,
but like, we're not, society is not at the place where that word can be used within the context of broader society and not have that meaning that he wanted to undercut from it. And
right.
So like, if you buy the logic of his theory, you could say there's an argument that this could happen, but we're in the age where we start to realize like it can't happen. And so where, you know, I used the word on radio 15 years ago to talk about Makaka, which is what that presidential wannabe George Allen called his a tracker, who was a guy. I think he was like maybe he was Indian or East Asian. I can't remember who the tracker was. And this was a word that he had learned because I think his mother was Algerian, and it was essentially the N word, but used for, I think maybe for Arabs, I think.
Right.
And I said the word on radio at the time, because I was like, people should understand what this word means. And when I'm using it, I'm using a description, but we're in a different era where like we have the advantage of knowing.
Right.
That because black people, frankly, have more opportunity to be heard in our society today than even 20 years
please.
Ago,
10 years
that
ago.
Like
yeah.
that plan to drain the meaning of that word and render it like sort of powerless didn't work out yet.
Right.
We're not there as a society. And so I'm okay with people saying like, you know, we should refrain from using that word in just about every context there is. And I, you know, that's just like the evolution of audiences. There's still stuff that you can't say. Like, you know,
absolutely.
I went up and maybe today I could, but certainly 25 years ago, 30 years ago in Boston, I can't succeed in 80, 90% of the clubs if I'm going to make jokes about books. Right? Like, you know, where's the complaints at that time?
Right,
I'm being
right.
censored. I'm not being censored.
Right,
it's just
right.
This is what the audience wants. They don't want to hear about books because you sound faggy when you say it or something. I mean, that's just what I was getting.
Right. And you'll get in trouble for saying faggy, you know?
I mean, I might.
But for me, you know, when I was growing up, we had this term band fag. And, you know, I'm gay. And I always thought of it as, you know, that we're just the nerds. And that's what it meant to us. And then you realize, okay, it has another meaning. And I won't let, you know, certain people can't use that word. I can call my friends that I've been friends with for 40 years and say, hey, how's my favorite fag or something like that. I can do that. And they know what my intent is.
Right.
And that it's a term of endearment. And that's it. Like when you're using like a stereotype or a word to describe one person, that doesn't mean, and doing it personally, that you're appropriating that for an entire group of people.
Right.
And that's, you know, these are the knee jerk reactions we have to deal with. Like, oh, you said that means you think blank. No. What did I just say? Take my intent. A person gets, you murder someone, you go on trial for homicide. Your sentence is determined by your intent. And yet comedians don't get the same consideration.
Well, but here's the thing is that, and I think that like, I think you and I share this dispositionally because I think dispositionally, I think I'm a comedian in that way. Like, I mean, I think like that is, and the things that I say to my close friends and they say back to me are the most horrible things in the world.
Oh, please.
And nothing, same
with, yes.
Nothing makes me feel better. Like, I mean, and it is a problem with, like, getting, you know, when you talk that way around civilians or the people watch it, they're just like,
right.
That's the most horrible thing I've ever seen.
I'm right. Like, yeah.
It's the sweetest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
But when you start talking about it in the context of public and you talk about intent, part of intent is also a function of, like, awareness of how it's going to be received. When I text something horrible to John Benjamin and he texts something horrible back to me.
Right, right.
That if somebody else said to me would be the most horrible thing they could possibly say to me. I know how it's going to be received. He knows how it's going to be received. And you need to have a situational awareness.
Right.
I think that, like, you know, that's why I think, like, you know, I'm not as concerned with comedians who can't say, they can say, they're just going to get some blowback.
Right.
You know, somebody
and
just IM me like,
say, then make a great joke about it.
Yeah. And if it's, you know, it's got to be really good if you're going right. to cross and be, you know, say something that you know is transgressive
right.
and expect not to get blowback. I mean, you can say it.
It's just a complaint right. that it's not commercially like viable for them anymore to say exactly what they want to say because there are new voices. And so now that there's been an elevation of certain kinds of voices, right, then you can't there's more of a balancing act that has to happen because the ecosystem has changed.
Right. And the words have different meanings and we've been through different experiences. So this doesn't apply anymore. I mean, there's so many jokes that don't apply anymore, you know, like stupid jokes. Like when I remember when they first got phones on the airplane and I used to do this joke about, every phone call on the airplane phone is the same thing. Hello. You know, right. and that's how it was. But, you know, like these kids don't know that people would just scream into a fucking phone. Guess where I am? You know, but it's
I don't remember that at all in my life.
Oh, yeah. There were when they first came on and they were like $100 to call.
I remember those phones, like, though, in the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, hello. But that's stupid stuff. But there's also. I don't know. I just want people to know that when a comedian gets on stage, their only goal is to make you laugh. That's it.
Well, and, you
know, okay, and make a point. But if you get offended, that's on you. That's on you. If you're offended,
But this is where you and I part. I disagree. You can't. There is. You don't get a license because you're trying to be funny. I mean, if it's offensive. It's offensive. And really, like, I mean, look, you could tell any joke you want in your apartment.
Right. Right.
And you could self-select who comes into your apartment.
Right.
Or you could rent out a theater and you could self-select who comes in there.
Right.
And when people are coming to see you, more often than not, they're going to be less offended because they know what to expect.
Right.
But, like, I mean, it's a commercial endeavor, and like all the only punishment that anybody gets for saying something offensive in the context of like a comedy club is that they may hurt their commercial viability, and there's no right to being commercially viable.
Right, but if you're in a comedy club, which is our home, a basement with a brick wall, and you're trying out new shit. You don't know where the line is. You need the audience to tell you too far. That's not going to work. Like if you're trying new shit out and it doesn't work, you should not.
Well, that's on the comedy club owner. Cause the comedy club owner's got to say, I'm willing to sacrifice part of my business by allowing that space here. But,
they should all allow the space there.
Yeah. I mean, and then again, it's a commercial viability question. which it's right. always been at the end
it's
of the day.
It's all about fucking money, Samuel.
It's always been, though, Judy. It's always been. It's just like, you know, buddy, I'd love to have you in here, but all you do is you talk about books. And that might be right. funny down in Harvard Square, but, like, you're at the Kowloon.
Right, and that's
what
that's
are you doing,
their,
dude? You're not, I right. don't want to have you back. Sorry.
Right, but that's their prerogative to say you don't fit my audience. But once the comedian is on stage and is working their shit out in their club, like when the audience comes to them, and they're, because we need the audience. We need the audience to give us information. Once we do that, like, if you get offended, move on with your fucking life. You don't say, oh my God, that person said this, and they should never be able to get on stage again. No. When you, like, when you go to a concert and you hear some, one of your favorite music artists, and they do, like, a set of new songs, and you fucking hate them, you don't say that person should never be able to go perform again.
Well, I think if they did a song that was, like, you know, about how black people should be enslaved or something to that effect, or, you know, if they got up there and did that, what was that song that Sacha Baron Cohen said? You know,
throw the Jew in the well.
I mean, if somebody actually got up there and did a, you know, sincere version of that, or, you know, did it, I think that people will go, like, you shouldn't be allowed to play music anymore. Right. I mean, right? That was the hope, that when you're watching that movie, you're hoping that people are going to go, hey, wait a second. That's not appropriate, buddy. Yeah. And they didn't.
They sang along.
Right? Like, when we're watching that, when he's singing that song in the we're not,
right.
We don't have a problem with him. We have a problem with the audience not reacting to him.
Right. Well, I mean, that's where I draw the line. If they're laughing for the wrong reason. But, you know, Andrew Dice Clay has had that. He's like, yo, he's had to stop and say, yo, this is a fucking character, you know?
Well, yeah, except for the most of the people who went there, we weren't in on the joke.
Right.
And there's been a lot of, like, you know, replicas that were not in on the joke. And, right. you know, it's sort of like, what is it? The get her done guy or whatever it was, or, you know, who went up there doing a character and then was like, this is working. I'm going to be this guy or whatever. I can't remember who it was.
Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah
it was
yeah.
a parody until it started working. And then he was
like a Florida comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, really?
Yeah. Right. So I don't know, but that's not what I want to talk about, Judy, but we've run out of time.
No, I don't want to talk about Fat DeSantis and get your fucking hands off my body, and how dare you move the... I hate them. These poor, they're human beings.
Yeah.
Well...
They're fucking human fucking beings. Fuck. Your parents came from... Your grandparents came from Italy, you fucking... Ugh! And fuck you, Lindsey Graham. You're telling us what to do with our bodies. You haven't never even seen a vagina.
Well, at least once.
Yeah, when he was coming out of it.
Yeah, I mean, there you go.
And fuck Trump and his fucking kids. By the way, my apartment, which I thought you could rent for like $3,000 a month, I can rent this for $150,000 a month. Because I'm a Trump. Yeah, that's how much my apartment is worth.
Oh, I see what you're doing. I get what you're doing.
I got it. Yeah.
Judy Gold, October 5th at...
No, I'm not. October 5th is Yom Kippur. That's how un-Jewish you are.
Is it the 5th Yom Kippur?
It's okay. The 6th. The 6th. I'm at the Wall Street Theater with Jessica Kirsten. And then the following week, I am...
Norwalk, Connecticut.
Yeah, that's October 6th. And then the following week, I'm in Provincetown for Women's Week. Women's. And then October 22nd, I'm in Fort Lauderdale at the Sunshine Cathedral for the gays.
If you go to judygold.com, spelled exactly like you would imagine it would be, you will find...
No, that's J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D.com.
J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D.
Judy Gold. Right.
That's exactly how you would think it would be spelled.
Right, but not my Twitter and Instagram.
No, your Twitter is Judy, J-E-W-D-Y, Gold.
Because I'm a Jew.
I like that you have that bell on your desk.
Yeah. Jew.
Is that how you get... It's time for my lunch. Hello. Yeah.
Let's go. I want some matzah. Let's fucking go.
I love you. Thank you so much.
I love
much.
You, Sam. Happy New Year, even though you don't celebrate. Emma,
I
you're
do
adorable.
Celebrate. I'm off Monday.
Oh, good. Happy, healthy, prosperous
Lashana
New Year.
Tova to you.
Shana Tova. Emma, go, you know, bow to the cross.
Yeah.
Matt Lech. I'm going to go with Matt Lech.
That's the correct pronunciation.
Thank yeah. you. Is Matt Lech also celebrating?
No.
The high holiday?
In a sense.
I'll be gaming.
He'll be
whatever.
Gaming.
Bradley Alsup, adorable.
Thank you, Judy.
You're welcome.
I love you, Sam.
Bye, Judy.
Can I not? Judy. Can you not wait 6 months to have me on, you motherfucker?
It hasn't been 6 months.
Bradley?
I think it might have been.
Really?
Yeah, March.
Yes.
You gotta be shitting me. Jesus.
April.
All right, I'm sorry. We're not going to do that again.
You.
We'll have you on soon.
You. Your
see you later.
Elisa
Thank
loves you,
you
too. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, Judy Gold. I guess Freebie Friday. We didn't
yeah,
have time to
yeah,
take a break.
Yeah.
Got a lot of IMs. Tushy fan, enough of this fuck stickery. Why not talk about something cool for a change, like swords? For instance, swords are awesome. Damn coastal elites.
Swords, yeah.
The distinguished gentleman, Sam, I give you permission to say the F word once a day. Thank you. Pistachio croissant. Sam is Judy on, so you look like a good boomer by comparison. Well done. Well done, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, this is awkward. Let's do number six, shall we? You know, it's super awkward when you are in charge of oversight over an industry, mm-hmm. let's say, and let's say you're also a congressperson. Oh, bye, Bradley. Let's say you're also a congressperson from Indiana. And you want to hold people to account, some of these bankers. You'll recall that back in 2008, these bankers were responsible for throwing the world into a financial crisis, one which cost almost, well, let's just say several million Americans their homes and jobs and took really almost a decade until the jobs bounced back. And there was a tremendous amount of fraud associated with this. And you're performing oversight. And your name is Representative Trey Hollingsworth, Republican from Indiana. And you're trying to make it clear that you are really holding these people to account. And then this happens.
From Indiana, Mr. Hollingsworth is now recognized for 5 minutes.
Well, good afternoon. I'm excited to be here with each of you. Before I get started on my questions, Mr. Moynihan, I wanted to let you know, Saruthi, raise your hand, Saruthi. She has been my team member for a couple of years now, but on Monday, she becomes a Bank of America team member, about which she is very, very excited. So I hope you'll take good care of her and know and recognize the talent that she has shown already in our office. I'm sure she'll do the same at Bank of America.
We will do that, and her father already works for us, so he'll take care of it.
You should have called us.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to chat about some of these issues today.
Oh, they got a chat? Oh, that's so sweet.
Oh. It's a family affair, too.
You know what's really sort of, like, stunning? There is, and I wonder if, I guess maybe it's just a coincidence that the oversight of U.S. banks, put that Chiron back up, because that is so awesome.
Yeah, whoever put this together, good job with the smash zoom-ins.
This is C-SPAN, incidentally.
Right.
And here he is, oversight of U.S. banks. Thank you for giving my staffer, my longtime staffer, a job at the bank where I'm going to perform. Oh, well, so no worries. Her dad's been working here for years.
Yeah. It's a family affair.
It really is stunning how there is such a tremendous lack of embarrassment.
That's the thing. It's like, we know this stuff happens behind the scenes, but to say it so publicly and just in the middle of when you're being filmed, just be like, oh, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
That's the galling part for me.
Yeah, we like to talk about how much has changed because of like Occupy and the Bernie Sanders run, and not enough no. is ultimately the conclusion there.
I mean, I don't know if anybody mentioned anything. Probably not, because I would imagine there's a lot of people on that committee, regardless of party, that have staffers who are working for banks or intend to work for banks,
yeah.
did work for banks, will work for banks again. But it would have been nice if somebody said, like, does anybody here not think it's a problem that there's, like, such a revolving door that it, literally, how about this? How about we just take our staff and just let them walk across the carpet and sit behind you?
How about we just start sharing an office? Honestly, we could cut down on some real estate space and just make it a whole joint operation. It would be easier to talk and not have to make calls and email, right? You could just be in the same space.
Yeah.
LOL. LMFAO.
We got to talk about...
the context of that. You know. Just funny.
Bro, bra, dude.
Matt's sitting in the right seat today, folks. Let's talk about this guy that we who opened up for Donald Trump the other night.
J.R. Majewski.
In Ohio. I don't know if everybody remembers. Let's just play a clip to remind everybody about this guy. He was very, very funny. He told everybody, he got up and, you know, he gave everybody his pronouns. This is a good one.
How's everybody doing today? I hope you're just as excited as me to see the greatest president that the country has ever seen. Donald Trump!
Yeah, predator!
So for those of you that don't know me, my name is J.R. Majewski.
J.R. Majewski.
And my pronouns are patriot and ass kicker.
Yeah, okay. Patriot and ass kicker.
Oh, yeah. I kicked a lot of ass over in Afghanistan. Oh, wait.
Wait. Let's actually listen to him. He was asked about that, actually, on the One America podcast host, Chase Geyser, back in August. Asked him about his time there.
Time kicking ass.
He doesn't like to talk about it too much. He didn't want to.
Did you serve in Afghanistan?
Yes, I did.
How many tours?
One.
What year were you there? What years?
2002, 2003.
Wow. So you served right at the beginning.
Yeah.
What was that experience like?
Tough. I don't like talking about my military experience. Not that we've said too much. I really don't like to divulge a lot of things about the military because, you know, it was a tough time in life. You know, the military wasn't easy, but in retrospect, it's one of the best decisions I've ever made. And, you know, I'd do it all over again. But, you know, out of respect of, you know, many things, you know, I my answer to most people when they ask about my military service is, you know, I served honorably, and I fought for this country for a lot of months over in the Middle East, and so did a lot of people that went with me. And, you know, when I see all these things that are going on today, I mean, if I could put my BDUs back on, if I wasn't so chubby, I'd probably try to find a way to do it.
Yeah, that is, you know what?
We got to respect that, right? Because it's been tough.
It's humility to not want to talk about it so constantly if you're a politician.
Well, yeah, Patriot definitely was showing the proper amount of humility. And I'll also say that ass kicker definitely, you know, that type of modesty is, you got to appreciate that. Except it turns out that the AP did some investigating, and it appears that military documents obtained by the Associated Press through a public records request tell a slightly different story than the one that Ass Kicker or Patriot just told. According to the AP, they indicate Majewski never deployed to Afghanistan.
Not for many months or just never?
Never.
Oh.
Well, not just for not for many months, for no months.
Wow.
Yeah. But instead completed a six-month stint, that's a tour, helping to load planes at an air base in Qatar. Longtime U.S. ally that is a safe distance from the fighting. And apparently, according to the AP, Majewski's account of his time in the military is just one aspect of his biography that is suspect. His post-military career has been defined by exaggerations, conspiracy theories, talk of violent action against the U.S. government, and occasional financial duress, which, of course, many Americans go through. Majewski's campaign declined to make him available for an interview, and in a lengthy statement issued to the AP, did not directly address the questions about his claim of deploying to Afghanistan.
Well, I mean,
LOL.
You're going to kill me with these. Like, I mean, it's uncouth to ask him too many questions about this,
excuse
right?
Me, because, excuse me.
Yeah. It is uncouth
Patriot
to
or ass kicker.
It is uncouth to ask kicker to recount ass kicker's military service, given the extreme trauma that ass kicker must have gone through. Right.
And look at how respectful we're being. Like, we think his pronouns probably should be like liar, but we're gonna honor him by calling him ass kicker.
You think what? You think.
Ass kicker's pronouns should be
thank you
liar lies, but unfortunately the Patriot has gone with Patriot / ass kicker.
I think you could also refer to ass kicker as fabulous. Is that a word? Fabulous.
Yeah, fabulous, fantasist.
Yeah. And we should say that it appears, and you know, they were looking at this. He's running against Marcy Kaptur, who's a district sort of revamped and made into a far more like Trump-friendly district. And this was one of the bellwether seats that was, you know, they were going to look at. And it's no longer a bellwether seat insofar as like it's not a, you know, it's not really going to tell you about anything else that's going on, because the House Republicans have now, according to Politico, cut loose candidate who misled about military service. The move comes a day after an Associated Press reports that Kaptur's opponent, J.R. Majewski, lied about his resume, including claiming that Patriot deployed to Afghanistan.
Yeah, please, can these news outlets get with the times?
The National Republican Congressional Committee booked $960,000 in Toledo, Ohio market to help boost J.R. Majewski. The House campaign arm is slashing the near $1 million ad by essentially walking away what could have been an easy pickup for the party.
They're like, we could probably get this seat to be red, but further associating ourselves with Patriot is probably not going to be beneficial, and we'll put our money elsewhere.
Real shame the way that the Republicans are treating Patriot.
Canceling him.
Yeah.
Canceled.
Discrimination. Honestly.
If you can't say that you served many months in the Middle East in the military, do you really have free speech?
Censored.
Honestly.
Censorship.
I want every Republican who made fun of Brian Williams for that whole saga to do the same here with J.R. Majewski. Let's go.
So authoritarian to pull the rug out from under ass kicker fabulous. Really a shame.
I mean, George Orwell is just rolling over in his grave right now.
Yeah. And Orwell goes by he or his, I think, so that's okay. Mm. Pretty impressive. What else should we do here?
Oh, Alex Jones part two, right. Trial? Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Alex Jones on his second of three defamation trials. The first one ended with a multi-million-dollar settlement, which you know, probably cuts into his savings that he's probably got somewhere in, you know, bunch of gold buried somewhere. He tried to hide a lot of money too, it sounds like. Here is, Alex Jones, I guess essentially, he is asked by the plaintiff's attorney. This one is in Connecticut. Chris Mattai, whether he knows he was discussing real people when he spread conspiracy theories about Sandy Hook victims and their families. And Jones responds by basically almost having an episode, it appears.
That's Robbie Parker, isn't it, Mr. Jones?
Yes.
That's the real Robbie Parker, isn't it?
I mean, I said years ago I thought Sandy Hook had...
Robbie Parker's sitting right here. He's real, isn't he?
Yes.
And for years, you put a target on his back, didn't you?
Objection to the form of that, Judge.
Well, I mean, I...
Didn't you?
I've said his name. It's true. I haven't said other people's names, but who they are.
You put a target on his back just like you did every single parent and loved one sitting here, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
That's argumentative. There's no... It's speculative. There is no foundation for it. And it's inappropriate to this time.
He's a real people. You know what, Mr. Jones?
I think you just told him to move on.
Just like all the Iraqis, but you liberals kill and love. It's just, you're unbelievable.
Whoa.
You switch on emotions on and off when you want. It's just ambulance chasing.
Why don't you show a little respect?
Objection, Judge. I think that you get what you're giving this for. Objection.
You have families in this courtroom here.
Pause it for one second.
Yeah, he forgot where he was for a second.
And I don't know in what world he's living in that, and certainly the vast majority of this country bought in to the invasion of Iraq. Not everybody, by a long shot, but certainly the majority of people did. But the war was contemplated, executed, justified. The lies that were propagated all came from conservatives, Republican Party. It was not Democrats who were renaming French fries, or liberals renaming French fries freedom fries because they didn't like France for not joining us.
And to the extent that there was opposition, that opposition resided with
left.
People like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. And the criticism we have the Democrats,
Barbara Lee,
that he's is that they cooperate with the Republicans too much.
Exactly. It's so twisted. And it's, I mean, it does give you some insight into Alex Jones, though. He is, in part at least, out of his mind.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the fact that, like, even if you actually believed that, why would you say that in that context?
I mean, he's probably, well, one, yeah, he got, he actually, the judge, not the judge, the attorney there totally got his goat, and he forgot where he was for a sec. He got a little combative. But I think it's partly all of that time where they've spent calling Hillary Clinton the ultimate warmonger that they, like, have completely lost sight of the reality in that sense of where...
Well, yeah, and the whole, like, PR offensive at the start of all these trials, which is that Alex Jones gets stuff wrong, but so does the New York Times, and that, and like, but Alex Jones really cares about it. Well, he doesn't really care about it.
I think he's out of his mind, and I don't know if he started off that way.
And that's what his ex-wife has been saying, right, publicly now, because his defense in their disputes was that he's basically an actor who doesn't know what he's doing and he's putting on a show, or does know what he's doing and he's putting on a show. He's playing a part. She says, no, 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 that's not the case.
Is there any more worth listening to? Let's go.
Why don't you show a little respect?
Objection, Judge. I think that you get what you're giving this court. Objection.
You have families in this courtroom here that lost children, sisters, wives, moms.
This is a struggle session. Are we in China? I've already said I'm sorry hundreds of times, and I'm done saying I'm sorry. I didn't progenerate this. I wasn't the first person to say it. American governors might be blamed for this, as the left did. So we rejected it mentally and said it must not be true. But I legitimately thought it might have been staged, and I stand by that, and I don't apologize for it.
And don't apologize, Mr. Jones. Please don't apologize.
Now, I've already apologized to the parents over
because
and over again.
Because we know you're
going to apologize to you.
Objection.
Don't apologize
objection.
To you.
You're going to do it again.
Objection, Judge.
Aren't you?
Objection. No, yeah. Objection, argumentative.
Don't apologize
objection.
To you.
Well, it's hard for me to get a word in edgewise.
It is, but I think there's
client.
One officer of the court and one witness and
so
an officer of the court heard the objection.
And I can't rule on your attorney's... Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Just come on.
I can't rule on your attorney's objection.
I understand.
He's talking, and he may have legitimate...
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm trying.
It's not me. Oh. It's him. I mean, let's be honest. It's him, right? I mean, it was like this. What am I on trial here?
I love seeing him unmanned like that. Like, just
am I on trial?
What is this sort of session? Like, no, this is an American courtroom, you oaf. Yeah.
What am I on trial? Is that what it? Oh, okay. Oh, I am? Oh. Yeah.
That was some old school TV lawyering, cross examining there, right? It's like something I would see in a movie. He got him.
There's your Perry Mason moment again. You're going to get a lot of those from me.
It's really easy to get my goat. I'm
Here's
that
the thing
crazy.
Is that Alex Jones clearly misunderstood by all of us. And what we need is a great journalist to sit down and
really
ask
him out.
Probing questions and promote and remind everybody that he was right about the FBI at one point.
I did get that. Yeah, that I got right.
Man, I it really that does not seem like somebody who has a full mental capacity.
I'm going to change my plea to insanity. Can I do that? Mm-hmm. It's not a criminal. Okay, darn it. Not a criminal case.
Whatever the case is, I hope internally it's really unpleasant for him for the remaining years.
Yeah. I really don't think that there is.
I've apologized plenty of times.
You know, like, here's the thing. It's not enough that he didn't start that rumor. Maybe he did or maybe he didn't. But that's not really a defense. It is the targeting. And, you know, when you want to talk about, and that's why he's paying for it. And frankly, I'd like to know what the, and there must be a team of lawyers. I mean, we just play this clip from Alex Jones, and I would imagine Alex Jones is going to end up paying a lot of money, or at the very least, being found liable for millions of dollars for his defamation in this case in Connecticut, may also be in the case in Texas, although Texas may be a little bit more a little more amenable to him. But what Alex Jones did to these families is really not much different than what Tucker Carlson has done over and over again in his career. And Bill O'Reilly in that same chair did before Tucker Carlson did.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember back when there was half a dozen people or a dozen people who were protesting out in front of Tucker Carlson's house, wherever that was? Was that out? Was that in Florida or where was it? Was it his main house?
I remember the guy in Montana at the store that got in his face.
There was a guy in Montana, but there was also, I don't know if it was in Maine or Florida or his New York house. There was some place where Tucker Carlson, and he was worried about his family.
Oh, yeah.
Where he lied and said that they kicked the door down or something.
Yes.
Like,
and in fact, what they were doing is they were just on the street protesting out front. And there was all this concern. Have we gone too far? Like, is it fair to go after his family? They're not, TV people, you know. And here is Tucker Carlson picking up from like where these other transphobes have left off, making money off of generating transphobia, pretending to be concerned about kids while they promote violence against a children's hospital. Here is Tucker Carlson. This is from Thursday. This is from last night on Fox, discussing the gender transitioning care that's offered at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. He is claiming that the medical center is only offering this care for money and are not actually helping children, and that the people who should be held responsible for these abuses are the members of the hospital's board.
Yeah, he saw the bomb threat that was called into Boston's Children's Hospital and said, how do I mainstream that for my national audience?
I mean, fascism really is the socialism of fools. These doctors are doing this for the profit motive. Are you kidding me?
I mean, and let's be clear. This is also the guy who said, you know, teachers are abusing students if they have them wear masks. All the stuff that we're finding out about COVID and reinfection and whatnot.
And then teachers are grooming students if they're gay and speak about it.
I want to make sure that we don't put up the name and the picture of these people, right? Is there a way for us to...
I didn't watch this.
All right, let's see. I just want to make sure that we don't. If we do, we'll just block it out afterwards. But here is a segment from the other night.
Those patients.
So again, this is a hospital.
All right, pause it for 1 second. See if you can cross, shorten that frame so that we can take the frame out. He's showing a picture of one of the doctors. And do we got it? Okay, let's do it.
Physicians and ethicists and other adults who ought to be stepping in to protect children from their worst impulses, from the latest fad, from their parents' neuroses. But they're not doing that because it's just too profitable to destroy the lives of kids. So who should be the backstop against this? Who are the people who oversee
this? Pause it for a second. The millions of dollars that Tucker is getting, and there's no way to, you know, disaggregate, you know, what is it that gets people to tune into his show? But he's literally, money is rolling in for him in essentially picturing, and we've tried to crop it out, putting a picture of a doctor up there. And we all know what happens next, right? We all know what happens next. This person has to go underground. They have to change their phone number. They may have to move. This person's life for, I don't know if it's going to be weeks or months, maybe it could be years, is going to be completely devastated. Completely devastated. Because Tucker Carlson has decided that we're going to put this person through the barrel.
But this is good business and politics.
Yep. For money.
Really should be exercising adult wisdom here and restraint. Well, that would be, by definition, the Vanderbilt University Medical Center's board of directors. And we're going to name them now in the hope that these people will do something to stop
all
these crimes.
Now, we should tell you, pause it. He has placed pictures of 11 people with their names up there. And let's be clear, this is not like we're putting up the names of these board of directors because they are exploiting their workers. This is because Tucker does not agree with an accepted medical practice that parents have signed on to, that kids have gone undoubtedly through years of trauma. And again, you don't walk in and get any type of surgery. It takes months, if not years, to get puberty blockers.
Yeah.
And then it takes years to get surgery, except for in the And I don't even know if it's the case, like the most extreme body dysmorphia case.
Yeah, I mean, the slide they put before this is they're referencing top surgery, and even that said, typically this is to the age of 18, unless it's like basically with parents and doctors, and this is a child who's been transitioned into staying not male, not wanting breasts, and they're going to have breasts. So if they've been transitioned for like 7 years, top surgery is not actually that crazy.
Yeah, and to say that it's some sort of fad, it's either a fad, right? Like getting a pet rock. That's why you did years and years of hormone therapy, and then in the end ended up getting top or bottom surgery to transition into the gender that you identify as. Or it's the derangement of parents. I thought that this guy was all about parental rights and individual rights for how parents want to raise their children. Now it's either a child giving way to a fad, something cool in school, what clothes you want to wear, or it's the parents who have derangement and we have to protect the parents from their own choices.
That's a really good point, because he says, who's there to protect the kids from the neuroses of their parents? And actually, like, people who want to help us teach about the history of racism, or that it's okay to be gay or trans, like, those are the people right. that are trying to protect children from the neuroses of their parents.
I mean, and that's what robust gender and sexual education in schools should, in theory, be doing, which is providing a wealth of information to protect kids from, say, really religious, bigoted parents who make them hate themselves. And Tucker Carlson's doing this en masse. And like you mentioned, he's stepping into Bill O'Reilly's shoes exactly. How much time until a doctor is murdered by a right-wing terrorist because of what Tucker Carlson is doing here? To Tiller the baby killer. He's trying to replicate this with doctors providing trans-affirming care.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. This is, I mean, and we know that he studied Bill O'Reilly. You can go back and look at a C-SPAN interview he gave based upon his book. I think it was in 2000 or so, 1999, 2000, 2001, where he talked about Bill O'Reilly's going to have a reckoning moment where he plays like the everyman, like he's helping out the average guy. But in fact, at one point, he's just, you know, his whole career is just a tenuous. And if they find out that he's been yelling at a stewardess to have, you know, better mimosa sent to him on a flight, it's all over. And what Tucker realized sometime between 2000 and 2015 is that Bill O'Reilly never had that moment of reckoning. Bill O'Reilly was only gone because he had, even after the millions of dollars of payouts, he wasn't gone. It wasn't until like all of Fox had to be cleaned up because it was a sexual harassment factory. And Bill O'Reilly was one of the chief foremen, essentially. And that's how Tucker got his job. But Tucker realized at one point, like, I can do this. And he's basically doing Bill O'Reilly all over again. And this is my Dr. Tiller moment. Let's just play the audio without the pictures.
Lives of more children are destroyed. So the board members would include Edith Carroll.
No, I changed the, yeah, well, and he just literally goes by and names them all. I mean, these people's lives are going to be ruined. This is not, you know, this is not just a question of getting protested outside their homes. We already know that one person called in a bomb threat to a hospital in Boston.
Which all these folks, libs of TikTok particularly, couldn't wait a second before jumping on Twitter saying, oh, this is probably a false flag done by a leftist to make us look bad.
Of course. Well, if it makes you look bad, you've answered your own question there. All right. One last thing. We'll end on something sort of fun. So there's this guy, Dennis Prager.
Mm.
And Dennis Prager is a radio host who went on to Tim Pool's show and said, I am aching to debate some left wingers and they won't come and debate.
Mm.
And, among other people, I offered to debate. There's been a couple of listeners of this program who've called into his show to say Sam Cedar's available, and he won't do it. He won't do it ostensibly because I made the mistake of saying he got divorced three times, when in fact, he got married three times. He got divorced twice. Now, I'm no soothsayer or fortune teller, so I don't know, have any inside information as to what's happening with his current marriage. But that became the reason that soothed the ache he had in inside himself to not debate. But eventually what happens is you get so embarrassed by not actually fulfilling what you've gone out there and said. Like, I also think this happened with Joe Rogan. We were getting on Rogan for not having any folks on the left on his show. He knew about it. I mean, Joe and I at one point, you know, years ago, exchanged emails. I mean, and he referenced this program. Michael was trying to get on. And he wasn't going to have us on because we sort of embarrassed him. And I take it as a positive thing that he ended up having folks like Pacman on and Kyle Kulinski and Burgess and ultimately Bernie Sanders. And that's good. I take that as a win. I take Dennis Prager showing up on TYT as a win. And but Anna Kasparian raised the fact that, like, what are you talking about? Aching for a debate, and you had the opportunity to do it. And this was, like, how do you not prepare for this question like Prager did?
I wanted to just kind of start off with, I guess, disagreeing with the notion that the left is afraid to have these kinds of discussions or debates. In fact, you had tweeted that video that we started this conversation with, and there were a lot of responses from prominent individuals on the left. I want to give you a few examples, starting with Vosh, who's a big Twitch streamer. He's got a big YouTube channel as well. He says, "You couldn't be more wrong. I love spirited debate in the free marketplace of ideas." He even provided his email and would love to have that conversation with you. My good friend Ben Burgess also responded. He's a great guy. He says, "Hi, Dennis. I'd be delighted to chat with you either on my show, or you could host it through PragerU, or I'm sure Modern Day Debate or some other neutral platform would be happy to host it." And on multiple occasions, I noticed that Sam Cedar would also love to debate you. So he responded in that tweet as well, saying, "Available," and adding, "Tim Pool knows what lengths he would go to not even be on the same stage as me." Right, Tim? So there's some drama with Tim Pool. But just wanted to let you know.
Pause it for one second. I would just say that Tim knows what that's about.
That was Tim, a tweet for one?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was on Tim's show. And Tim, I think, had like sort of had tweeted out about Prager.
Yeah.
And Tim did a thing. What was that called here? What?
Oh, gosh.
The alternate Facebook or what? I can't even remember.
That Burgess was at.
Yeah, there was something in New York. And maybe someday I'll talk about that as to where I was while that was happening. But nevertheless.
Where you would have been if you would
have
Where been
I would have been if I was allowed. But. Interesting. It was an interesting dynamic. But anyways, let's let Anna continue here, and we'll hear Dennis Prager's response.
You don't have to ache anymore. There are lots of people on the left who want to debate you.
Oh, I have no doubt that there are a lot of people on the left. The issue that I raised was people at the New York Times and people like you, for example. You pleasantly surprised me by doing this, to be perfectly honest. And by the way, I think proof of my theory is a piece that I read on some left-wing or progressive site just today about how angry many of your viewers are that you're having me on. Whereas I will tell you, I would get no such feedback from the right if I had a left-wing person on my show. They would be thrilled. So...
Also, there's no like evidence to suggest that TYT's viewers were upset that Prager was coming on. I mean, love if he could cite it.
There's some people who are the whole no platforming folks that take it pretty far, but that's pretty marginal. But also, I seem to recall when our friend Stephen Robbins called into Prager and asked to have you on. Prager said my audience wouldn't like it because nobody knows who you are.
And he hung up on you.
Let's be clear here. Exactly. Let's be clear here. First off, the idea that there are some members of the audience that he's citing as evidence that there are some members of TYT's audience that would be upset with TYT if they had Prager on. And he cites that as evidence. Let's just assume for the sake of his dumb argument right. that there are people there. Yet, here he is making these comments on TYT. So obviously, that is not evidence that he would not get invited on there. Or he could have invited TYT's people onto his show, but he did not do that. He could invite all of these people. And in fact, all of those people who would be upset that he is so concerned about that don't want him platformed on TYT, he would have had no problem with Prager platforming them. But like you say, he said himself that his audience would be upset if they put me on.
They'd be confused.
Huh.
I would also add, well, I'll say this about the New York Times in a bit.
Let's yeah.
Many of your viewers are that you're having me on. Whereas I will tell you, I would get no such feedback from the right if I had a left-wing person on my show. They would be thrilled. Hmm. So I still stand by my belief that in general, the people certainly in the higher echelons of the left don't want to debate. But it's probably not worth debating whether there would be such a debate. I presume we're having one now.
Yes,
and
yes.
And I'm glad we are.
Yeah. You know why?
Higher echelons.
Yes. Well, but you know why it's not worth having that debate for him? Because he's already lost it. Yeah. He's already lost that debate and he wants to move on. Because that debate would make it clear that he is so full of it, it's unbelievable. All of those people, incidentally, that was mentioned to him, would come on his show. And if the audience would be so excited, why won't you do it?
Well,
and I would also add, when you talk about Tim Pool has said publicly that I am blacklisted from all these shows, not allowed to go on. I will also add his whole talk of upper echelon. I've got some news for you, Dennis, because I know you're watching this. Not as I do it live, but I know you're going to watch it. You and I are no different. You're just a talk show host on a radio network. You were lucky to enter into that business at a time where you could get subsidized by the right. Prager University is not a real university. It's a YouTube channel. It's a YouTube channel where you got $10 million worth of investment from some right winger because of your pro-Israel stance. You're vehemently anti-Palestinian and anti-Arab stance. And so you were gifted that money. You are no different. No one at the New York Times wants to debate you because you are just a loser radio talk show host like me.
You're in the muck with us, Dennis.
Exactly.
Bro, bra, dude.
Enjoy it, Dennis. Enjoy it. Roll around in the sty, in the mud with us.
We're all in the same boat. I've looked at your Wikipedia and I see that you took some courses. That's my favorite part of his bio. He took some courses at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs.
Ooh.
Whoa. Did you take some courses? Is that why you think you're in the upper echelon? Because of those courses you took 35 years ago?
Why does Ta-Nehisi Coates not want to debate me? Because I did go to some classes at Columbia one time.
The only difference between you and I, Dennis, is that you're a little bit older. You're more supportive of Israel's suppression of Palestinian rights, subscribe to conservative stuff, and you're just have double the amount of divorces that I have. Okay? I got that accurate. I looked it up. You've had 2 divorces and 3 marriages. I've had 1 marriage, 1 divorce. I may catch up to you. Is that what I need to do?
Then you'll be on equal playing field.
Then we'll be on the same echelon. Who are you kidding? The upper echelon. You know why you're not getting a debate from the upper echelon? Because they don't give a shit about you. In fact, I don't even give a shit about you. It's just fun to make you squirm, make you have to run to TYT, and make you hang up on your callers. You can send all the callers you want to call me. I'll do a 25-hour show just to take all the calls from your people. And Emma knows it.
Yeah. We know. We'll be here
exactly.
Until midnight.
I love this guy. What a such the amount of inflation that your ego demands is unbelievable.
What's funny is to hear them talk, and they're just bullshit posturing when they say totally. That thing about the left. And I almost wonder in the back of their mind if they worry about that coming back to bite them. But I mean, I feel that him and Crowder, when they say that, they do look very comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. So there it is. I don't know. Is there anything else to say?
No.
LOL.
But do check out that debate. Like, later, Jen kind of corners him on Israel-Palestine, which is pretty fun. So,
all right. We're going to read a couple of IMs, and then we'll get out of here. Oh, okay. All right. Let's see. I did not get my Adium up there, so I got to go through the whole thing here, which is hard to read. Moxie Boosted just became a member. Thanks to Brandon, I can send you guys $10 a month. Anyways, I've been meaning to send this for a while, but debt relief is a net good for my generation. I have a BS in physics degree, and I want to eventually get my PhD, but currently find myself working for a private water filter company. I will work this job until my debt is paid, but even when I begin my academic career, it's almost guaranteed I won't earn as much as a job in the private industry. I plan on being a poor physicist later in my life. It's just the reality of following my passions. Left is best.
Yeah, it's horrible. We have a nursing shortage. I heard about this woman that's going to nursing school with somebody I know, and she took out private loans, which private loans, you have to start paying the interest back immediately, it's very expensive. And also just so she's working, having to work basically part-time, close to full-time, and also just not enough time to actually do the work, so she's not going to probably pass. And she's
jeez.
And also raising kids because she's like 45. So it's like the amount of expecting private banks to support this is just ridiculous.
Absurd. Nick from Philadelphia, I'll massage your hamstring, Sam. Thank you. North Dakota Llama. A North Dakota teen was ran over purposely by a man who they got into a political argument just prior. The teen was declared dead on the scene. The man who killed the teen was quoted as saying the purpose of running him over was that he was a far-right extremist, though investigators say there's little evidence of this claim. Republicans such as Rand Paul are already using this incident to call out Biden for his violent rhetoric.
I did see that teen was run over. I didn't know that. Didn't know that was North Dakota. But I mean, probably if that is just the facts of the case, I would imagine there's probably some mental health stuff going on in addition to just like the Democrats being murderous.
Mind Goblin, these nut jobs in the Senate GOP caucus are really going to lean into an abortion ban 75 days from the midterm? Seems like another enforced error. Am I wrong? No, I think you're right. Cattle Napper. Apologies if you've already been asked about this apple type, but what are your thoughts on Rave apples? Recently got to try one, and it instantly became my favorite. I am not familiar with Rave apples. I am not familiar with them. I don't know anything about them. But I will look into it, I can assure you. Let's see. Brain Party. Love you guys, but have a Putin-Russia... you have Putin-Russia derangement. Forget that you disagree with the invasion, but mindlessly repeating Ukrainian propaganda isn't helping the situation. I'm not sure what propaganda we're... I mean, did they not call up 300,000 reservists?
Yeah, you have to be specific with a IM like that or it's pointless.
Did they not institute the draft? Is that because... Because what? Like, what part... Like, here are the facts that I think are absolutely indisputable, and people can tell me what they think. Russia invaded Ukraine.
What?
Russia's invasion of Ukraine is not going well. That they did not contemplate a 9-month war. Russia, indicative of that is the draft. Indicative of that is the calling up the reservists. Ukrainians, by and large, in general, want weapons from the West in the United States. They do not want to surrender territory or become or lose their sovereignty to Russia. What else have we stated as fact?
I don't know.
I mean,
but that's why I am like that. You'd have to
be specific, please.
Yeah, delineate the propaganda that we supposedly echoed.
Happy Casual Friday, folks. As Tom of Link, more cheery news from Britain. Some people are getting excited about the coronation. The Queen's coronation took about 3 hours. Coronations are officiated by the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh.
We'll be desperately looking up how to do a coronation. He wouldn't want to ruin his big moment. Also, a few days after the Queen passed away, guy got arrested in Oxford for allegedly shouting, "Who elected him?" during an official Oxford reading of the proclamation, Charles III becoming the King, Charles III. Although he says that he was later released without charge after refusing to be interviewed without a lawyer present. Seriously, though, could Greenwald hurry up with his piece defending the right for peaceful protest? Did Tucker reject it when Greenwald submitted it for approval and editing?
Hmm.
Clown Shoe Mike, idea for a special show and explainer episode. Could maybe run a poll in the Discord. Just a deep dive on a specific topic the audience would like to know more on. Example, like how the Federal Reserve, I assume you mean, interest rate works. Like, I understand the basic concept, but not how that cascades through the economy as a whole. It's sort of easy. The basic concept is they set the benchmark rate in which banks lend to each other, or I said the Federal Reserve would lend to banks, which implicates the rate in which banks will lend to each other. Banks are in the business of making money, and their interest rates are going to go up if they're, you know, the product that they're buying, essentially, which is money for a period of time, goes up. And that's the way it cascades through. It's not, you know, one-to-one necessarily, but that's basically it. Noah from Tampa. Hello, can I call in to talk about the trial against HCSO and Corporal Mark Clark for wrongful death of Andrew Joseph III? The family won $15 million in court yesterday. I sat in on the trial. Yeah, call in on Monday or Tuesday. Nuclear machination. Shout out for all the weed growers out there. Ain't trimming a bitch. That takes forever.
Yeah, home grow now allowed in New York, I was told.
That is correct.
By the guy who sells me my weed.
Six plants you can have. Catfish Jim. Sam, did you hear on the program yesterday? Emma is a self-proclaimed wonderful singer. She said she would only sing on the program with your permission.
Nope.
Can you give her permission to sing now on a casual Friday?
Nope.
We'll do that in the future, I promise.
Nope.
Voting on annexation in Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia begins today and is scheduled through the weekend, says Vermont Ben. We repeated the reporting that there is a bit of a sham election going on. That land is part of Ukraine. I understand that there are a lot of folks there who are separatists, who want to be part of Russia. Do we know the exact numbers? I do not. If that part of the Ukraine occupied by Russia is Ukraine, I would think that if you want a legitimate referendum, it should be run by Ukrainian officials. And if it is not, then it is dubious. Yeah. Now, who was it that won by? Oh, it's yeah. I mean, how much does Putin usually win by?
He's usually very strong.
It's pretty well in elections, but I'm sure that has nothing to do with it. I'm sure.
Yeah, these are not really the conditions you typically want to run elections in.
Yeah, it seems a weird time to sort of like, but as opposed to like maybe it's a pretense for something. All right, three more. I'm afraid we'll see continuing war crimes and Russia acting desperately in the face of humiliation and defeat, forcing NATO to act, says Jules Winfield. DNC Google pundit. I also got the Mark Russell reference. I used to watch McLaughlin Group in the 90s on PBS, and Mark Russell was usually on the right before or after McLaughlin Group, but at the time I just remember thinking he was kind of boring. Was he funny or any good? No, he was boring and completely not funny. We used to do a parody. Cross Comedy used to do a parody. My good friend David Waterman, very, very funny guy, did a Mark Russell. And this is what their idea, I remember this song, of political music was. Barbara Bush is falling down, falling down, falling down. Barbara Bush is falling down, my first lady. It's like the comedy.
Keep going.
That's it. I can't remember anything else. The stylings.
I still have the Lizzie's. Who's that laying on the carpet? Who's that laying on the floor? It's Lizzie on her back. She's had a heart attack, and she won't be ruling England anymore.
Well, that's like a rugby song.
It's like a bar song.
It sounds so timeless already, and it's actually very topical.
Yeah, now it suddenly is accurate.
MIDI Doctor says, where are the relinquishment cohorts of regretful transition people coming forward with their tales of being forced into being trans? Hit the like button. All right. One more. Sorry. What's that?
I think we have a new
Majewski
clip at the end.
Oh, we do? Okay, we'll do that. Last IM of the week. Chris Burdick says, from what I understand, King Charles's coronation ceremony will begin with a 20-minute eulogy for the Windsor bosom. And ladies and gentlemen, we end today's show.
This is like an encore clip, right?
Encore clip, like
at the end of a concert.
If he doesn't, if Majewski, I'm sorry, if Patriot, confabulist, ass kicker, doesn't start this press conference with his pronouns, I'm going to be pissed. Ugh. With Patriot's pronouns, I'm going to be pissed.
The inquiry states, we show one deployment to Qatar from May 2002 to November 2002. What he did, meaning me.
Ugh, pause it.
Or where he made...
He's Patriot his.
Patriot's pissed that he... The Patriot's pissed that Patriot was mispronounced.
Yeah.
Me. Or where he may have went from that location, we do not have visibility on. In fact, the orders and the military records that I've been able to obtain from my personal files shows that all of my deployments are listed as classified. This was a strategic and strategically placed, excuse me, to crush me and defame me with a fake. The inquiry states,
is that
we show one deployment.
Clip?
Yeah, that's it. So it's classified. And that's why the AP couldn't get a hold of it.
The intrigue grows.
Ooh.
I want to, this guy. He could kill somebody with a pencil.
This is harder than nailing down Lee Harvey Oswald's service.
Yeah, honestly. And hopefully, though, some of Patriot's former colleagues in the military will clear this up, right? But they might just... They're in black ops, right? They're undercover right now, so can't get any verification from them.
Cannot confirm or deny the existence of Majewski.
Cannot confirm or deny whether he was one of the elite killing machines that we have in the military.
Whether what?
Patriot was. Yeah.
Right.
We could tell you about Patriot, but we'd have to kill you first.
That's right. Majewski? Maybe that's not even Patriot's name.
Chat's saying he was on a mission with Steven Seagal. That sounds right.
Bradley in absentia, Matt, Emma, great job today, folks. Shana Tova to those of you who celebrate the Jewish New Year. I will be out on Monday celebrating the Jewish New Year with the fam. Back on Tuesday, Emma will be here on Monday. Bye-bye.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught. See the truth in the light fall. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the Nets are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere.